Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to call to order the October the 23rd, 2024 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. We have a very full agenda this afternoon, and a very full room of people. So our goal here is to be as thorough as we can and also move through this agenda in an expedient manner to make sure that everybody in the room's time is used fairly and wisely. The purpose of this commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having a special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are used by both the board to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development visible from the public right of way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks that are located within the Savannah local historic and conservation districts. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangements of structures are not within our purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off all cell phones. So first today, we're going to look at signposting. Members of the board receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it will be removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were any projects not properly posted this month?
Shouldn't we bring up the one with the altered posting?
You know, you want to bring that up, please? And
Item number 13, petition of Alexander Trujillo at number 16 East 39th Street. After the fact gate, special exception request. I'd like to offer a motion that we remove that from the agenda. The sign was tampered with and it was posted where people could not see it.
Okay. Could we pull up a picture of the sign as it, in its altered state, please?
Yeah, I'm going to get Caitlin to come.
So for those of you in the room this today, the public hearing notice was posted, and if you look carefully at the picture and zoom in, it is an alteration after the fact that that was removed from the sign. So the sign is not posted as presented and also was not clearly visible from the right of way.
Also, I went by on Monday and I saw that myself.
Okay. So we are going to ask for that to be, you know, as it was removed. Excuse me. One moment. As it clearly was it's seen that it wasn't, it's removed. We've had a member see it and verify that it was not, and it was also not clearly visible from the public right of way. So the purpose of these signs is that you are able to see it. You are able to put it directly so you can see it when you're driving down the street from every access point. At this point, they're behind a fence. They need to be on the exterior of the fence. They should be where that green work, that shrubbery is, or on the front of the fence so people passing by can clearly see it and read it. As it's behind the fence, that is not considered to be clearly viewable from the public right of way. So at this point, according to our rules and our expectations, we have to remove it from the agenda and continue it until next month. You can step forward so that we'll make your public comment. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, sir. Anthony Poulos from Oliver Manor on behalf of the petitioners. Mm-hmm. I just want to put on the record that the petitioners did not alter this in any way. If it's faded or I don't know, I can't speak to what happened, but I just want to put on the record that they did not alter this sign.
Okay, but it is not as it was printed, and it was not visible from the clearly visible from the public right away.
I would disagree with that sentiment, and the sole reason is because we have four separate public comments on this issue.
But sir, the expectation is that it would be in front of the fence. That's not clearly visible from the public right of way. So it's on the exterior. So you put it on the fence. You don't put it inside the property line.
We just request new signs and
we're going to continue it until another to the next month. Yes, sir. That's
understood.
That's all it is. That's the expectation. It's not that it's, you know, if we make this exception for you all, then, you know, we get into a whole process and it's a legal requirement. And, you know, if we make that exemption, then we have to do it for everybody else. Okay.
We understand. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
And another issue is if the sign is altered, they need to call us and let us know. Because it needs to be in the same condition as when we gave it to you. So if it's altered, if it's damaged or anything like, please call Ms. Morgan and she'll give you a replacement sign.
Is it possible to get one in all black, or is there a requirement that it has portions of it have to be in red? Because I think only the red part is faded, if that makes sense. Can it be in all black, or does that one part have to be in red?
We'll fix it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Were there any other issues with any sign postings? No? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards for visual compatibility factors and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Including anybody online, if there's anybody online. No? Hearing no objections, I am going to ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Kirsten Connor, I motion to approve the consent agenda.
Jeff Notrika, second.
Jeff, you make the vote.
Approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve. Katrina Horning, approve.
Okay, the motion is approved and has passed. Okay, adoption of the agenda. I need somebody to make a motion to adopt.
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to adopt the regular agenda as amended.
Jeff Notrika, second.
Okay. Katrina, could you make a vote, please?
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Notrika, approve.
Okay, the motion to adopt the agenda has been approved and is passed. The previous meeting minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to last month's minutes? Hearing none, can I have a motion?
Pat Richardson, I offer a motion that we accept the minutes from the previous meeting.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Katrina, could you?
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Notrika, approve.
Motion passes. Are there any items we need to remove from the final agenda? Continued agenda. These are items that have been continued, deferred to the next meeting, or a date certain that staff has determined incomplete at this time. Can I have a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to approve the continued agenda.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Notrika, approve.
Motion passes. Are there any requests for extension? Hearing none, we can move on to the regular agenda. Applications that are submitted monthly appear on the regular agenda in the following order by district: the Victorian District, Kyler Bramble District, Streetcar District, and Conservation Districts. Let's begin the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The board asks the petitioner to limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairperson. We will structure board discussions by calling on each board member for two rounds of two-minute comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature, and I will be notified. I will call on you by name. You will submit your name and the record for the record, and then you can comment. Please keep your comments on from online for 3 minutes or less. And now we'll go with the first item today. Petition of J. Elder Studio, COA 240047-14, 1011 Jefferson Street, rehab alterations, addition, special exception request.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project for 1011 Jefferson Street. This project involves rehabilitation and alteration of two adjoining single-story non-contributing buildings. The scope of work includes repairs and updates to improve the structure's strength, layout, and overall function, recladding of southern building.
Could the public please keep your conversation? If you're going to have a conversation, please step outside because you are being picked up on the mic. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Recladding of the southern building with new siding and windows, a new 650 square foot floor will be added above the northern portion of the buildings and rear portion of southern building, and the rooftop patio at the front portion of the southern building. The project also includes a request for a special exception from the standard roofs configuration. Roof decks, pergolas, and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade to allow for a roof deck slash porch from the second floor on the street facade. So just to go through this area, here's some current images of the site. And then we'll look at the elevations. This is showing the addition up top and the renovations to the building. For a little bit of context, 1011 Jefferson Street was built circa 1930s, non-contributing. It's the only non-contributing resource on the block between West Park Avenue and West Waldburg Street. And this is just the Sanborn map starting with 1916 showing how the building that is there today was not there at the time. It was looks like an outbuilding for the property here. But then by the 50s, we see it on the maps. For the special exception request, it is to allow for this roof deck area here. So it can be seen on the elevation drawings and here as well. So for special exceptions, the inclusion of a rooftop patio would not be against the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of the ordinance with regard to the design standard that says pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade. The omission of the roof deck would not change the configuration of the second story addition being set back from that first story here. The roof deck is integrated into the design of the second story addition and is not a typical deck that would be fully visible from the primary street facade. It reads more like a porch or enclosed balcony than a deck. There are surrounding contributing resources with second story balconies, and this proposed design is more similar to those than a typical rooftop deck. It would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. Overall, staff found that the project meets the standards and only had one condition, which was about the casement windows, some of them. So there's some of these are square, which just the ordinance says they have to be taller than wide. That We have since spoken with the applicants and they can explain more how they're adjusting that. And then there was just a fixed window here that also just needed to be functional to meet the ordinance. Also, we'll note, because much of this came in after, well, after the preliminary agenda went out last week, we have a letter of support that came in from the Victorian Neighborhood Association. And we had one public comment that came in time. But I was just handed a stack of a few more that must have come in more recently, and I can pass those around. But just so you can at least see that there has been some neighborhood support and the applicant has spoken with them.
Does anybody have any questions for staff?
Kathy LeBron, I've got a question for staff.
Yes.
The sandbar maps are really the only piece of information that we have on these properties as to when they were built. But do you, I mean, if you were to resurvey the area, would these be would this be a contributing building? Is it part of that 100 plus buildings in the Victorian district that are stated that could be contributing buildings that have yet to be the Victorian district, historic district has yet to be amended to include?
I don't believe so, but they have not been added. So legally we have to review this as non-contributing. You know, certainly it could have been, but we don't have, unfortunately, an exact date. And since for Victorian, 1927 is the cutoff, you know, our records say 1930, whether that is 100% accurate, I would need to see some more primary sources on that. But as it's legally written, it's 1930 and the district ends at 27. So that's...
Staff doesn't have any additional materials, like have you looked at the cadastral files or anything like that to really pinpoint more of a date? Because it's certainly a corner store, and a corner store that served the neighborhood.
Well, I think since it was built after the date and the cadastral surveys happened outside of the period of significance at that point, we didn't think there was going to be information, because a lot of times we don't see the construction dates on there. So
that's all we know.
Yeah.
And it's not part of that. The numerous inventory that hasn't been included?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you.
Anybody else have questions for staff? Okay. Is the petitioner available? Maybe speak forward, state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Jerome Elder with J. Elder Studio. Good afternoon, everyone. I first wanted to say thank you for staff, because we spent quite a while going back and forth on potential opportunities with this addition. The owners of this property have taken it and made it a home. And as you know, and as you mentioned, Ms. Advina, that it was a shop at some point. As you can see in the signboard maps, there was another building, and then by the 1950s, you see the brick corner shop being added. We've done a lot of research looking into it, and we couldn't find any further information. No, honestly, we've been looking, and what we strove to do was to create an addition that is a contrast to the existing building, and made sure that it was something that is smaller, contrasting material, and also trying to keep it very simple in its form. I don't think the floor plans were shown, but as you know, it's a very small footprint. It's in one of those peculiar lots neighboring it. These are all just cottages along the lane. And what we're hoping to achieve is why we also asked for that special exception for the patio that's on the second floor, is to just give a little bit of outdoor space for the owners because they have zero land, like lot. So this creates an opportunity for what is essentially a second floor patio porch. As you can see here, we also did choose to go with contrasting material, and we set back the building itself from the parapet because that was something that we thought was a character defining feature of that brick building. And we're to making sure that that window on the first floor is operable. And we do have these two windows above. There isn't enough space for us to put like a hopper window below. So what we've actually ended up with is the windows are just slightly narrower than they are tall. So they're taller than they are wide, but we can increase that if that's something that you desire. Right now they're 3'4" tall by 3 foot wide, but we can probably go to like a 2'10" by the 3'4". As you start getting smaller, it just becomes a sliver. And that's actually the bedroom space. And you can see here, bedroom and bathroom. It's where those exist. As I said, it's a small building, very small footprint, peculiar location. But what we believe we did here was create an addition that does contrast that historic building. And we're hoping for your consideration for approval. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
Kirsten Connor. Sorry, Kathy. Hi, Jerome. I really appreciate the setback on the commercial structure so you can see that parapet restored. I just curious if it was ever considered to put the main storefront door back in versus the side door entrance and having that as the entrance, just because it is such a main defining feature of that building, having that corner entrance, which is not super common, but you do see a lot of it downtown.
It was considered, but as we looked at it, programming wise, planning wise, and safety, because that lane is one that people turn into and it's so close to the corner, and there's little to no sidewalk or curb there, we didn't want to make that become that main entrance. And it, as it sits right now, the main entrance is actually in that same location that we're showing it. I think that's probably exactly why it's like that now.
Okay. Thank you.
Capulet Bynap. I do appreciate the setback from the parapet. I do think it needs to be a little deeper. I do have a 17-foot house, so I understand the width, 17-foot width house, and it's actually quite spacious. But my real question is, I accept the existing setback because the materials are differentiating you from the old. I too agree with Kristen about the door. I would like to see that defined as a door, maybe not an operable door, but at least on the exterior that you could see that it once was a corner store, and because those were so instrumental to those neighborhoods. Second, the window alignment on the second floor northern portion, it doesn't align with the first floor, and I was just the relationship between the first and the second floor, I think, would be better defined if those windows actually did align somewhat.
And that's, you're speaking about these two?
I am.
Yes.
Or even moving those. Well, those two are the bedroom and then this is the bathroom. So, yeah.
I think we can explore that. And I do think there is an opportunity for us to make that be simulated as a door, at least have the understanding of a frame that is door frame and then it's an infill within it. So it's something that we definitely can explore. But yeah, we'll take those into consideration. I do think we will still have to, based on the ordinance, make it an operable feature. So it will still be a window, but we can see what we can consider with the how we frame it to ensure that it still simulates the idea of a door.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the petitioner? Hearing none, now I will open this up for public comment. Is there a member of the, any members of the public that would like to make public comment? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Thank you for affording me the opportunity to speak. My name is Michael Arcangelo. I own 304 and 306 West Park Avenue. We basically share the backs of our houses kind of touch. I live in 304. I have three tenants in all the other properties, so I kind of have about four times the usual headache at stake with this project, but I'm here to tell the board that I'm really not worried about it. The owners, Chris and Hans, have already proactively reached out to all the neighbors to explain the project, provide themselves as a resource in the event we do have issues, but they were really excited about the design with the nod to history and the modern updates. I've already reviewed the plans, and I think it's the perfect update to the neighborhood. As far as the porches go, there's one pretty similar directly across the street, and there's two more around the corner on the 200 block of West Park, so I don't think it's out of character for the neighborhood. But most importantly, these two gentlemen are wonderful neighbors, members of the community, and I truly believe they deserve a beautiful place to live. I think this is the best way for them to stretch out a little bit in the limited lot they have.
Thank you very much.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC still has issues with the proposed design of the rooftop addition being visually compatible and not contextually appropriate. The box shape is too close to the parapet, as already been mentioned, and we agree with staff's recommendation on the windows. It is aggressively modern, and it overwhelms the historic building's mass. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody online? No? Okay, then I'll open it up for board discussion.
Jeff?
I recommend we go with staff recommendations. I like what I see.
Pat?
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, I agree with staff recommendations, and I also do agree with HSF's comment about the setback above the parapet. I'm looking further into the drawings. I do think it is a bit close and overwhelming.
Kathy.
Kathy Lidvina, I again would like to see the door, the corner store door detail be brought back to a door configuration. Does not need to be an operable door, but at least it would read as a door and retain that historic feature of the building. The windows, I would like, as proposed by for the petitioner, the windows I think would be more in keeping as the 210 by 3-4. It's not distinguishable enough, 30 by 34. The person walking down the street won't read those as rectangular windows. They'll read them as square. And the alignment of the windows and the relationship between the windows between the first and the second floor, I think needs to be, those windows need to be aligned to keep that relationship going. I see this really as a partial demolition. Because it's removing so much of the structure, the south side of the structure, but because it's it's written as non-historic, I think this is the change in materials distinguish it.
Katrina Hornung, I agree with staff recommendations and would also like to see that consistency brought to those second story windows to kind of align with that rhythm. Thank you.
Any other comments? At this point, then I will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve this as recommended by the staff.
Do I hear a second? No? I don't get a second, so I would ask for somebody else to put forward a motion.
Kirsten, Connor, Kathy, if you want to do it and just maybe add the door component, however, make it so it, because it is required to be operable if it is technically a door.
It's a window. But
correct?
It'll be a window.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
A door.
I apologize.
We'll make it read as a door, but the windows will be operable.
Okay. That's, you got this, Kathy.
And that's what Mr. Elder said that they would do, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Sorry.
Kathy Levine, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of petition of J. Elder Studios 24-00474-C0A1011 Jefferson Street Rehabilitation Alterations Edition Special Exemption Requests with the following conditions. One, reconfigure the square casement windows to include the fixed window below to ensure that they are taller than they are wide per the applicant, 210 by 34. Can you say that?
Mm-hmm.
And reconfigure the large fixed window, corner window on the first floor of the existing brick building to be more consistent with the historic design of the corner store entrance. Two, align the second floor northern windows with those of the first floor existing windows. And is that it? Oh, you want to set back the parapet? Three, maybe explore the possibility, can we say that, of setting back that parapet instead of a 1 foot setback. What do you think is appropriate, Kirsten? 2 foot? A two foot setback so that the second floor addition is distinguishable and distinguishable from the building, the existing building, and so that the combined height doesn't overpower the existing structure.
And some surrounding structures, yeah, that's good. All right, do I get a second?
Yes, I'm sorry. And approve the special exception request for the standard 7910A. Or 2B4 roofs configuration and roof decks to allow for a roof deck porch from the second floor on the street facade as requested because the requests meet the special exemption criteria.
Katrina Horner, I second.
Jeff.
Jeff Petrika, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Katrina Horner, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, before we go to the next item, can you ask if anybody's here for item number 13 and to let them know that that's been continued? Because I think there's members of the public that are here for that.
Okay. Any folks who are here for item number 13 on today's agenda, petition of Alexandria Trullio, 16 East 39th Street. This has been continued until the next meeting due to improper signposting. Okay. Next on today's agenda. Petition of David Bradley, 24005214, COA 536 East Gwinnett Lane, new construction, small parts 1 and 2, and a variation recommendation request. Jonathan.
Thank you, Darren. So I'm going to be jumping back and forth here, and you're going to have to bear with me here, but me 1 second. So again, I know I said this during the pre-meeting, but since I think more people have joined us, we have a lot of, I believe, people here who want to make some public comment. We asked that the public comment be focused on the application that is before the Historic Preservation Commission and not delve into matters that are not before this commission. This commission is not here to weigh in on any personal disputes or neighborhood disputes, simply to apply the ordinance related to the proposed project. So just wanted to make that point. In addition, I know you all have some questions just about kind of the nuts and bolts of this proposal. It's a little bit different than probably what you've seen of late. So very pleased to have Edward Morrow, our Director of Development Services here, who can, Kathy, I know you have some questions, and he is the expert on all of that. I stay in my lane. I let Edward do his stuff. So as you noted, Chair, the applicant is requesting approval for new construction, small parts 1 and 2. This is for the proposed construction of a, quote, townhome. It would consist of 1 two-story building with 2 units attached side by side. The proposed building would be located on a vacant parcel of land fronting on East Gwinnett Lane. I'm going to go into this in a little more detail. The only frontage is on East Gwinnett Lane. The applicant is also requesting a recommendation to the ZBA for a variance from the standard regarding rear yard setbacks in the TN1 zone. The requirement is for a 30-foot setback, and Edward can correct me if I'm wrong. And the applicant is requesting relief tomorrow. As of now, the applicant is scheduled to appear before the ZBA tomorrow morning. So this is all moving along quite expeditiously. So I wanted to give you a little, and you bear with me here as I go through this in a prodding way. I'm going to hop back and forth between. The applicant provided a very thorough submission here. So this is the site in question. So the existing site, as I understand it, has frontage on Gwinnett Street, East Gwinnett, and on East Gwinnett Lane. And as you will see, what is being proposed is to create a new through lot that would front on East Gwinnett and all the way south to East Gwinnett Lane. The subdivision, as you know, you all do not weigh in as opposed to the HDBR on subdivisions. This is what we're talking about today, lot 2. The existing site is vacant, just grass. There's nothing on the site. Again, this is the lot 2 that we're talking about, where the proposal for the new construction would be located. I'm going to jump back to my staff report. So what's interesting about East Gwinnett Lane, sadly, most of the historic buildings that were on this lane were removed over the decades. The only thing that's left that is contributing is directly to the west, these 2 one-story cottage contributing buildings that are directly, these would be located next to that new through lot, and I'll walk you through that again. So going back, they're right over here, the historic buildings. So there would be a new through lot here. We're not reviewing any proposal for what's going on, what would be proposed here. The applicant is not proposing anything at this time. What we're talking about is right here. But the only contributing resources on East Gwinnett Lane are these 2 lane houses or dwellings. And you see them right here. They're quite lovely. I'm going to just keep going down. In looking at the sandboard maps, you can see that there actually used to be a number of frame structures located along East Gwinnett Lane. Again, sadly, they were all knocked down at some point. And so much of the context of the lane was lost. There has been some new construction on the lane, and I'm sure you've all been out to the site, as you are wonderful in doing that. Directly to the east, there are some new houses that front East Gwinnett, and they have garages facing East Gwinnett Lane. And then this is actually a building that fronts on Bolton, on East Bolton. And this is a two-story ADU, I believe, a garage with an accessory dwelling unit that was approved by this commission that is, I believe, just wrapping up construction right now. So going back. So when staff was looking, first of all, I think it's important to just talk about the variance recommendation request. Again, here's not to beat a dead horse, but this will be the future through lot from East Gwinnett to East Gwinnett Lane. This is the lot two that we're talking about for the new construction. The applicant is requesting a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals related to the rear yard. When we looked at the historic pattern of development on this lane, and we also, if we go back here, one of the things I did, I walked a lot of both the Victorian Historic District, Streetcar, Downtown Historic District. There actually are quite a few dwellings on the lanes, and I'm not just talking about carriage houses that have been turned into houses, but these two are an example on East Jones Lane. But then in the Victorian District, you actually have full houses that only front on the lane. So this is on East Wahlberg Lane. This is another one similar to the historic resources that I was just mentioning on this lane, on East Wahlberg Lane. This is another house on East Park Lane. This is a particularly lovely little red house I'm sure you've all noticed on East Park Lane. So the point of that exercise was that there are houses on lanes. So when we were looking at the criteria for the recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and again, looking back at the maps, the patterns of development, there were historically a number of buildings on this lane and on other lanes in the Victorian Historic District that did not have large setbacks. And so it was staff's view that the criteria was met for a recommendation of approval for the rear yard setback. Now, as I mentioned when we started this review, this application will be going before the ZBA tomorrow. There are a lot of comments that we've received from the public related to, decks looking into people's backyards and all of that. That is obviously not really our purview. So that will be something that the Zoning Board of Appeals will be discussing tomorrow. So the first part is the variance recommendation request. I think it's best to just kind of get that out of the way. Not get it out of the way, but explain that to you, I should say. Then we can go into, and I'm going to be relying on the applicant's submission here moving forward. So again, we're talking about this new lot two, which will be divided into lot 2A and lot 2B. And bear with me. Floor plans, again, as our chair noted, we do not get into, fortunately, what people want to do on the interior of their buildings. So this would be the view of unit 2A, the south view facing the lane. This would be facing north towards the houses on East Gwinnett Street, the western view. And then this would be unit 2A. And I know this is confusing, so I'm going to go back as to what I'm talking about here. But again, this is facing the lane. This is facing north. And this is facing east. So you will have all four elevations exposed. Again, facing west, there will be that new through lot before you get to those contributing resources. And then directly to the east are those garages that were built as part of the new construction on East Gwinnett. So this is the combined, I hope this makes sense, but basically this is the combined rear elevation showing, and this is the combined main elevation facing East Gwinnett Lane. So again, you have the contributing resources off here, and you have the non-contributing resources off here. And the applicant did a very nice job of showing this. So here are those wonderful cottages. These are the non-contributing garages. This would be the new structure here. And I will just, I'll let the applicant go through all this. It's the applicant provided additional examples that are found in the area that have been constructed. I'm going to turn it over to Edward when you all have your questions, Kathy, I know about, you know, how this was being looked at as a townhome. So one of the challenges for staff when we were reviewing this was it looks like an accessory building, but it's in terms of zoning, it's the townhome. It's a townhome. We obviously have no control over what people want to use their sites for their new construction. So as I noted, staff is recommending approval of a variance recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals related to the rear yard setback of 30 feet to allow for less than a 30-foot rear yard setback, and that's based on the historic context that you did have lane buildings. You still have those contributing resources that do not have a 30-foot setback. As you all know, both in the Victorian District, the Downtown Historic District, and the Streetcar Historic District, the setbacks historically have been, you know, you were just reviewing a project a few minutes ago where you had a building that was right up against other buildings. So there's considerable variety here. But in terms of our recommendation, we are recommending approval. Now, I understand there are a lot of conditions here. So if you all feel there are too many conditions for an approval, you know, this could be continued. But I'm just going to run through these and then you can ask me questions. And as I noted, Edward is here for any zoning questions. So we are recommending approval with 10 conditions. And a lot of these, though, are related to the fact that it looks like an accessory building, but it's a townhome. So the way we had to apply the standards, my staff was incredible help when I was drafting the staff report. So the first condition, further refine the design of the townhome in order to break up the massing. We did feel the massing was a little bit too uniform in order to have it be visually compatible with the contributing buildings and structures to which it is related. And as I noted, you have the only contributing structures on the lane are those little lane buildings. And so we thought, you know, we've shared all this with the applicant, that we would work with him to help break up the massing a little bit. Number two, substitute a different material for the residential entrances than the proposed metal in order to have it be in keeping with the character of the entrances found on the contributing buildings and structures. So you don't, the historic buildings, you wouldn't have a metal. So we're recommending that change. Restudy the exterior expression of the floor heights to meet the standard or request a special exception. As you know, there are requirements related to the exterior expression of the first floor height, 11 feet, and then 9 feet above. That's something that we would work with the applicant on. Restudy the design to include a visible foundation to meet the standards or request a special exception. Number five, I know this just came up on a previous application. Confirm that the 30% transparent features minimum is met for the ground floor facade to meet the standard. Number six, restudy the design to include front porches or covered or uncovered stoops for the entrances on East Gwinnett Lane to meet the standard or request a special exception. So there is a requirement if it's a townhome, it has to have one of those. However, since this is looking like an accessory building, which would not be visually incompatible given that there are other accessory buildings on this lane, the applicant either needs to, as we said, have a porch entrance or stoop or request a special exception from you all. Number seven, confirm the materials for the proposed two-story for the two second floor rear porches and flanking staircases in order to ensure that the standards are met. Confirm the locations of any HVAC units to meet the standard for screening. Provide information on any proposed exterior lighting in order to ensure the standards are met. And restudy the design for the fencing in the side yards to meet the minimum 5-foot requirement, the fencing, as you all know, in the building. There has to be a 5-foot setback there, or request a special exception. So I know there's a lot of, I'm going to circle back to just to make it clear, because I know it can be a little bit confusing here. So what we're talking about here is lot two. And so again, lot one is not before you all. The subdivision is not before you all. What we're purely reviewing is the proposed construction on this lot, which will be two townhomes, one with an ADU, garages, entrances fronting onto East Gwinnett Lane. There will be second story porch on the rear, as you saw. Let's go back to the full elevation. I think that's probably the easiest. So this is the view facing Gwinnett Lane, and this is the view that would be facing the neighbors on the back. So I know there are a lot of design details that still need to be worked out, but I hope it's somewhat clear what is being proposed. I know.
So I have a question for you, John.
Yes.
Sorry. On the East Gwinnett Street, what are the buildings that are currently fronting on the lots that are north of this? So if you're looking, if you're on
yeah,
East
sure.
Gwinnett Street, looking
sorry,
at
I'll go back.
Where,
yeah, thank you, Darren. So, this is a property owned by
right,
the applicant.
Yeah, I see that, but these three.
These houses, these are three buildings that front East Gwinnett Street.
Can we see those, please?
Oh, sure. Let me pull up a. Yes. So here's the applicant's property, as I understand it, the vacant lot
okay.
that's facing East Gwinnett
and that's going to be the
to the north.
Yes.
And then you have the buildings here that are in front of the property that's behind them that fronts on East Gwinnett Lane. Mm-hmm. And then you have, this is the new construction that I was talking about. You've probably seen.
Is this single story one here? Is that going to be in front of?
Yes, I believe all three of those are.
Okay.
So
when you look at it from this perspective, especially with the single story cottage, that's the building behind is going to read as, so, well, this is going to, from the perspective of somebody walking by, the rear building is going to be subordinate to this building, but in the actual case, it won't be because they're not on the same lot, but it would look like it from the casual observer, correct?
Right. When we looked at this, it was our analysis that it would read as an accessory
to that property.
To
all
yes.
three properties.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. It
yeah.
would look like an accessory dwelling, I mean, accessory building. The fact that it doesn't actually go with those buildings is not. You wouldn't know that unless you went in the backyard and saw that there's a fence
right.
there.
And then my other question is, as far as access, was when you're looking from Gwinnett, and if you want to go back to the actual drawings rather than this.
Sure.
Go to the elevation on Gwinnett Lane. It looks see. Like, when
sure.
we're looking at it, there is one entrance to this building.
Sure.
So, right? Let's go
I'm
back.
Sorry, let me go Gwinnett to the, let me go to the full.
The two garage doors.
Yes.
Or three garage. Is it three garage doors or two garage doors? Three.
Three total.
And two entrances.
Two entrances, and then there are going to be staircases. You can see.
So where are the access to the townhomes? Are they through those garage doors? And is the ADU?
Yes. If you go to the floor plans, you can see how the access would be provided. So this is for unit 2B. You'd have a staircase that goes up. And I'll let the applicant, Darren, do a better job of walking you through. But yes, there's an entry here. You can see there's an entry
from the garage
into the ADU, and then there's an entry into here, and you can go up. But I believe part of the reason is also there will be that access from the outside. But I'll let the applicant explain that to you.
Kirsten Connor, I have a question.
Yeah.
In the public comments, there's a lot about the survey of the property being incorrect. How as a board here, do we handle that? Is there, how do we consider that if it goes to zoning board?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, it's a great question, Kirsten. It's going to be going to the ZBA tomorrow, where I'm sure that will be addressed. But I, you know, the applicant submitted a survey, which you see before you. We see now there may be some question about where, I think what one of the letters was related to where the non-contributing garages were in terms of the proximity. But that really wouldn't, I don't believe, in my view, be a concern of before this commission.
But does it have to do with the placement of the building and the variance then?
No, well, yes. I mean, the rear yard variance is what is being asked. So I don't think that would be affected in terms of, but I see my colleague.
Sorry. Edward Morrow. So for your purposes, it should not have much of an impact. Just know whatever variances or COAs are approved, those approvals will be applied and this will go through a zoning review when it gets to the city. If the things that these boards have not approved, if they're inadequate, if they are, inaccurate, those are problems that will be faced further down the line. So this will only come up later if, say, for instance, there's a request for a 15-foot variance that is approved. 15 feet is 15 feet. If you end up needing, anything other than that and it ends up being inadequate, there would be no allowance. I'm sorry?
It's 15 foot 2 inches, then it's an issue, right? Or 15 feet 1 inch.
If you end up needing 16 feet, for instance, mm-hmm. it's a problem. You know, if you only need 14, it's not so much because the approval would be up to that amount.
But if you go to 15 feet and 1 inch, it's a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
But again, I think that's within the purview of the ZBA more so than this
right.
board. So.
Okay. Thank you. To that point though, I do see it being somewhat impacting, just because that means that the drawings, which I also have a problem with, are not accurate with the placement of the building and the surrounding buildings. Mm-hmm. So I think we should consider that, but thank you.
Okay, do you have any questions for staff? Or do you want to hear, what do we want to hear from?
Did you want to ask about the townhome?
I thought you were giving a presentation about townhomes and the definition of townhome and how you determined this is a townhome versus, yep. I thought you were giving a presentation.
I'm sorry. I fully recognize I'm a guest here. I'm here to support.
So please,
at
yes.
any point that you want.
So we would like the city's definition of townhomes. And we were told that you would be able to provide that to us.
Okay. And the Happy Levina, if you look on the submittal, it has the definition circled. And there's some confusion. I have confusion.
So having spent a little bit of time looking into this, I'm sorry, Edward Morrow again, having spent a little time looking into this, I'm not quite sure that the city's definition of townhome is going to be the most helpful thing here. Because in truth, it is not specific enough, I think, to really get at what the nuance is that we're having difficulties with. But it is on your screen right now. It says a single family residential building containing at least that omitted word least two attached dwelling units in which each unit is either located on a single lot, at least one attached dwelling unit located on a separate lot where there is a common wall. So again, it's kind of an interesting definition that I think sort of misses a few things that this case gets squarely at. But just understand that the zoning administrator has determined that the townhouse use is something that would be permissible here within this particular context. It's permitted use. But you can see just from your side how it has produced a requirement for several special exceptions. So.
Kathy Ladarna says the unit must be situated side by side. No such unit
should be located above or below another unit, and each unit must have its own external access.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. The petitioner's submission does meet that description. Or it could. It will. Do you want me to, should I kind of bring up my brief presentation at this point?
Oh, I thought you were, yes.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to just go to the desktop here. Okay. And I do apologize. It is very, very quick. I did not expect to have to do this today, but I attempted to kind of stick within what I felt like were going to be the most sort of significant things for you to understand. So this is the current configuration, and of course you are familiar with that. These are the parcels that are on the ground right now. So the petitioner owns 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got 4 separate parcels there. And so the thing that's going to allow him to basically apply these things that he is asking of you and the Zoning Board of Appeals, there's a subdivision to which they would ultimately be applied, those variances, and then he would pull building permits based on that COA. But that is something that has not yet been applied for. That's a forthcoming application. That is something that, had we gotten this, it would have been forwarded to the MPC, right? There's the potential that if this were done in a certain way, the numbers might look right, but we know that ultimately you're not going to be able to pull building permits because you're not going to be able to build a structure here without variances to the current development standards, okay? And so the standards in question are those that you can see here outlined in red. The townhouse standards, you can see this is a permitted use. It requires 18 feet of frontage and 1,050 square feet of lot area per dwelling unit. Okay, so we know we have to have at least 2 of those. And then let's jump up here to what this actually is. I guess in a more vernacular sense rather than the technical sense as defined in the ordinance. These are single family attached dwellings that are proposed. It has a slightly different lot area requirement per dwelling unit. So that's the first thing that I'll say. Technically, these are single family attached dwellings, slightly larger lot area required, slightly more width per lot that is required. I'd also like to add the caveat, in fairness, you're about to hear some information that the petitioner has not even heard from me, quite simply because our correspondence became unproductive. So this is probably new information to him as well. Okay. So in moving forward, this right here is what the zoning ordinance is attempting to create. It wants to see these lots put together with frontage on both the street and the lane. These are obviously very old lots, very old structures. Many of them are contributing. And so because of that historic context, we often make allowances and allow people to treat a lane as though it is a principal street and do the things that we do, say, were this Gwinnett Street and not Gwinnett Lane. But that's more, again, by historical development pattern, more so than appropriateness, if that makes sense. I fully understood once I saw the project down the street. It's a one level of dwelling and it has garages. Once I drove it, I fully understood why there was a perception that this would be appropriate. The only thing I could say about that is that it's a little out of scale, but in truth, it's a contiguous lot. It has a principal. And then it has an accessory structure with a garage below and a dwelling unit up above, but it is this configuration. That's what distinguishes this present petition from the one just down the street that looks very similar with living space above garages. So this is why this gets a recommendation of denial from staff. I would have attempted to explain the board could very well agree, hey, we understand you have a hardship, and they could award this gentleman a variance if they wanted to. My job is to advise this is what the zoning ordinance is attempting to do. That is why this gets a recommendation of denial. I did advise the petitioner that I would call each of these property owners. I would attempt to sell them the land, and he would be left with one lot where you see he would have the ordinarily anticipated configuration with the ability to do a principal and then an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of his property. So he would still have one of those, and he could sell the others so that they could ultimately be recombined, and they would have full access as the ordinance envisions that they would. So the second recommendation that I would have made, in the interest of kind of looking at the historic development pattern and then applying something that sort of makes sense under the current regulatory scheme, I would have said, submit a subdivision or a recombination plat that creates your one new through lot with frontage on Gwinnett Lane and Gwinnett Street. And what we would do, that would leave you with a new parcel that had 80 feet of frontage and 42 feet of depth. And you can see here, you would have ultimately two single-family attached dwellings that sat on either side of that what would be yellow property line. Okay, that would be something that staff could support in this instance. That would be just the subdivision. This also would still require action by the ZBA to allow him to have that rear setback variance. Okay, but the idea was if, and this is what I would come down the hall and talk to my colleagues in historic and say, take the historic building that is down the street, in essence, which actually this one isn't a good example because you can see it has 100% lot coverage, would not be permitted here. What would be something that is historically accurate, in essence, that would be contextually appropriate, drop that on there. And then basically any variances that you needed would be based on something that was actually contextually appropriate for this location that reasonably left some rear yard in order for privacy on the other side and a little bit of backyard space for the folks that would be acquiring these properties. And so in essence, we would attempt to get to the point that we are restoring something that looks like the actual historic configuration of these properties. But again, like I said, that's not a conversation that we ever really had. But at that, this still requires variance relief from the ZBA. Again, I think the issue number one was the petitioner didn't quite understand my job is to say this is what zoning is doing and allow my board to make the determination as to whether or not this is appropriate in that circumstance. So this is the first point of contention. The other one was that the petition should go to the ZBA first to kind of determine what is going to be your building envelope. What are you going to be allowed to actually build in? So that the point that it comes to this board, you have a clear building envelope. You're designing something that is not going to change to get to your point. So if the front setback is actually based on, it's actually based on the historic property that's that what's the, it's the average of the front setbacks of all the buildings on the lane. So if it changes, then obviously the rear setback need could change. It could change the size of the building itself. It could change a number of things that would kind of mandate a change in the design itself. So that was kind of the interest in saying, hey, go to the ZBA first, let them decide what they're comfortable with, bring a finalized design here. But again, I never had the opportunity to have that conversation. So I think that was the last of my slides. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you all may
Thank you
have.
For being so comprehensive, saying that you did have much time to prepare. That was very thorough. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm going to pass this out to staff members because, and I'm the board as well, but we have a very heavy agenda with a lot of people today based on Mr. Morrow's comments and some of our concerns that we've just echoed prior to the presentation. I don't feel we have enough information to be able to proceed with this at its current point. Clearly, usage is the most imperative part of this. We can't make a determination on the plan if it's not going to be approved, right? So the cart has been put before the horse in this situation. And your alternative proposals for the use of the land are also critical. Mm-hmm. So I see your hand as far as your public comment, but the point is
I'm
as the petitioner as well, yes. But we've got some issues that we're not going to be able to resolve in this forum at this point today.
Well,
excuse me, and I'll have you come up to the podium in a moment. So what I believe we should do at this point is continue this because we will not be able to resolve this today. With the issues that are presented, with the zoning issues that we cannot approve, because if we're approving this design, we're putting the cart before the horse, because we don't know whether it's the appropriate use for the land, based on the information that Mr. Morrow has just presented to us. Melanie, is that something? Are we in our remit? Pam, sorry. My apologies, Pam. Is that within our remit to do that at this point?
Continuance to the next agenda.
Yeah, without continuing with a petitioner response and public comment.
You'd need to at least allow him to comment, though.
Okay, so yes. Okay, so if the petitioner would like to step forward.
Chair, can I say a quick comment?
Yes, you can step forward, sir.
Kirsten, I also wanted to put out there, and I'm unsure if the
most of the rest of the board agrees. I don't think this package is a what's the word I'm looking for? I would need to see actual drawings, even if they are conceptual, but they need to be accurate and not just pasted photos. And so I would like to throw that out there that I, even if it does come back to us, I'm not comfortable reviewing it.
Katrina Hong, I agree with that. We need to see proper drawings.
Pat Richardson, I also would like to add that this will be a good time for the petitioner to use that list of exceptions as a punch list, you know, and come back with something that's more clear and transparent for us to make a decision from.
Our goal is ultimately, we want to work with you and make sure that you have your opportunity to use your land that you've purchased in, you know, a way that works for you and, you know, you as the property owner and also fits in with the parameters that the city has. So could you identify yourself for the record, please, sir?
Sure. I've been working with...
You need to state your name for the record,
sir. Oh, thank you. David Bradley. Citizen of Savannah. I own the lot in question down at 536 East Gwinnett Lane. I've been working with the city literally for years discussing different options for this because it is a non-conforming lot. Over the last several months, I've come to the MPC, sat down with John and Caitlin and Brad and gone over this conceptual design that I want. And what I want is to have two buildings next to each other that are primary dwelling units and then have one ADU underneath. And I followed all of the required setbacks, all of the lot coverage, all of the variance for the setback we'll get to, but required all of the standards that are listed for a townhouse and also for a multifamily. It works for either one of those. The only problem that anybody has had is Edward. And why he has had a problem...
Sir, this is not a personal...
No, it's not.
But the issue is that within the Zoning Board of Appeal, it's not the individual. As far as his criteria and how he has to interpret the criteria as a representative of the city government, is that's it. It's not a personal...
His
interactions with you are based on that, and that and so your appointment tomorrow with ZBA is to present the material, as we stated, because we can't make a recommendation on something that isn't in compliance. So it's up to that board of citizens to review the information that Mr. Morrow presents and you present tomorrow to be able to say, is this appropriate use of these lots in this context?
And according to everything in the Savannah zoning standards, it is. There is no reason.
But at this point, we aren't able to
no, and I see that, but I want to, reiterate that one, the survey is accurate, and there's been no fudging or moving of any lines on the survey. Every standard required 60% of coverage, and every other height and color is all to the standard. So I don't really see why somebody can come and say, I don't like it when the standards are met.
Well, nobody's denied anything at this point. But what we are asking for is that you go in front of the ZBA and then work with staff on the recommendations that are there before and present architectural, by an architectural set of plans, which is pretty much what we receive, as you saw in the previous presentation by Elder Studios. We need that kind of information put forward before this commission, before we can even begin to have a discussion.
Well, you see that the report, was approved by MPC staff, so I felt like I'd moved in the right direction.
That's the basis of what we're working with on a monthly basis. And there is, obviously a lot of contention. We've got a full room of people. You've got some neighbors that have some concerns, but we can't fully address this in this room today. Okay, so we're going to continue it. We're probably going to make the proposal for 60 days, you could come back earlier.
Okay.
But if it's all ready and taken care of, but I'm going to recommend that, so
my colleagues that we make a motion to continue for 60 days.
So if I wanted to, I can resubmit within a couple days.
Right, and have it on next month's agenda.
Next month's agenda.
Based upon tomorrow's meeting and everything else. But you are going to need to get some,
space and I understand these are supposed to be preliminary in nature.
Okay.
So this is my first time doing this.
No, right.
I'm just trying to do it myself.
It's a learning process.
You know, it's a tedious process.
It's about growth and learning. Right. For everybody. Thank you. Can I get a motion, please?
Jeff Dutrika, motion to continue this for 60 days.
You gotta take the COA number, please, Jeff.
COA number.
Hold on 1 second. Bree's getting the exact date since we have to put an exact date.
Okay, so the 18th of December meeting?
December 18th.
The December 18th meeting, COA number 24-005214-COA for 536 East Gwinnett Lane.
Katrina Horner, I second the motion.
December 18th. What's up? You're seconding?
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
Okay, let's get a vote on this.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Dutrika, approve.
So motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So if anybody's here for 536 East Gwinnett Lane, it has been continued.
December 18th.
Exactly.
But if you are here for that meeting, you may want to go to the ZBA meeting tomorrow. Okay, next on the agenda, 902 West 41st Street, COA 24004708.
Okay, so the applicant is requesting new construction, small parts 1 and 2 for a single family residence at 902 West 42nd. This project was originally scheduled to be heard last month, but the applicant requested a continuance to give them time to address staff's concerns and comments. The applicant has since submitted new and updated drawings to staff that addressed all of our concerns. So staff finds that overall the project meets the standards and is visually compatible. We only had one comment. It has to do with the height of the building. The plans themselves, as well as the project description, provides three different heights. All three of them are fine height-wise. We just need to confirm what the official height is so we know what we're approving. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the proposed new construction small parts 1 and 2 with the condition that the overall height is confirmed by the applicant.
Okay.
I believe the applicant is here as well.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for staff?
Kathy Levine, a quick question for the staff. Did you approve 1/1 or the 6/6 windows? I believe I remember right, the applicant said that was 1/1 via email.
Gonna be 1/1?
Yeah.
And then I just saw, well, I'll ask the applicant. And what, I didn't see any, the front porch doesn't have expressed piers. Did we talk about that?
We discussed it internally as staff a little bit because I did bring that up. And we believe in this case it could be okay, though, if the board believes that the express peers do need to be there, that can be a condition.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions for staff? If not, is the petitioner present? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Brianna Paxton. I'm representing the petitioner today.
Okay.
We agree with the staff recommendation, and I wanted to point out that the page 8 in the packet, as well as page 4 of the plans, shows the 31-foot tall building. Just with elevating it to 30 inches is required by ordinance. Mm-hmm. You know, the first floor 11 feet, second floor 9 feet, it pushed the building up a bit, and I apologize if that wasn't clear in some of the narrative, but per the architect's drawings, 31 feet.
31 feet. Okay. Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
Kathy Levina, would you object putting the express piers on the front porch as stated by the ordinance as a requirement?
Can you show me where in the foundation section of the ordinance that's addressed?
Sure. And then 1/1 is what you're planning?
Yes, ma'am.
Is staff able to pull up that ordinance for us? Thank you.
Essentially, it says that the front porch should have express piers. Can you, I mean, I don't know that.
Yeah, I saw that in the porch section, but when the foundation is going to be slab on grade, I didn't understand how you would have two different foundation types being required. And I was looking at the foundation mm-hmm. requirements. Can you show me an example where express piers and slab on grade are combined?
Not off my head, no.
Okay.
Slab on grade.
Wait, I mean, you just construct the piers out of whatever material you want.
So
it can be a facade. I mean, it can just be a curtain, you know, just a half brick, half block.
So
this can be stuccoed, so you just stucco right over it, and you create that.
An illusion of a pier with the stucco. Okay. I think that can be achieved.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Does anybody else have a question for the petitioner? Hearing none, is there any public comment? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC supports this infill project overall with one minor concern. The pitch and the slope of the roof creates additional height to the area where the majority is surrounded by one-story bungalows. So the additional height is a concern, which Brianna already expressed the fact that it's got to be set up and things like that, but just the overall height is a concern.
Okay, thank you. All right, now, if anybody else, anybody online? Hearing none, we can now enter into board discussion. Jeff?
No comments.
Pat?
No comment.
Kirsten Connor, no comment.
Kathy?
Kathy Levana, I would just like to see the expressed piers. I do agree with the height, but I think that is the requirement of the construction.
Yeah. Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Okay. Any other comments? At this moment, I'll take a motion if there is no further comment by the commission.
I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Hestia Community Partners, Brianna Paxton, petition number 24004708, COA 902 West 41st Street, with the condition that the front porch piers be expressed as submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Jeff Notrika, second.
Okay, Jeff, you want to make that vote?
Jeff Notrika, second. Approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Captain Levine, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Now we will move on to petition of Lynch Associates.
Thank you.
I'm at 625 West 37th Street. 24005264COA, an amendment. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So I'm sure you all remember this. This was the one where we had a very good discussion and then a follow-up discussion on definition of stories. I think you all remember this. This application was before you, and I'm going to just walk. I think you are all pretty familiar with the site. This is a proposed accessory building fronting the lane. Behind the house on 37th Street. When this was last before you, there was a tower element that you all raised some concerns about. So the tower element has been removed. There were also some concerns about some of the windows that they were fixed and not operable. So all of those concerns have been addressed. what I'm going to go back to here. Just bear with me. Here we go. All righty. So what the applicant is requesting is an amendment to the last project, the version of this project, I should say, that was before you. Variance recommendation request to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a variance from the following standard. Building size. The building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal building, not to exceed 700 square feet. The applicant is requesting this to allow for square footage that exceeds the 700 square foot that is allowed, with a proposed square footage of 737 square feet, and they can correct me if I have that wrong. So we went back, took a hard look at this. Again, we looked at what your conditions were the last time. They did remove the tower element. They addressed the windows. Excuse me. They provided the information on the proposed exterior lighting. Here's again the house on 37th Street. I won't go through all that. I know we have a long. So what's before you is the variance recommendation request. After looking through all the criteria, it seemed, bless you. It seemed, bless you. The conditions for the variance recommendation request were not met. We are recommending that you approve an amendment for new construction small parts in 1 and 2 because they have met all your other conditions. They got rid of the tower. They fixed the windows. They provided the information on the lighting. We are recommending a condition that the footprint of the proposed carriage house accessory dwelling unit be reduced. Thank you. To 700 square feet, and recommend denial of a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals for variance. We didn't see any justification for why, and given that it's 734 square feet, we just didn't find a terribly convincing argument in terms of the criteria. So that's short and sweet.
Thank you.
I can turn it over to the applicant.
Does anybody have any questions for staff? Hearing none, would the applicant like to step forward? Please state your name for the record, sir.
Garrett Knoebel, Lynch Associate Architects, owner representative. So just to comment on this, the previously submitted design complied with the zoning requirements, but was denied due to the storage loft over the second level. In order to accommodate the additional storage area, the footprint was enlarged by 37 square feet. The revised design complies with all other lot coverage requirements, except for exceeding the maximum accessory dwelling unit footprint by 37 square feet. Therefore, we are also asking the board for a recommendation of approval to the ZBA. And we'd also prefer that, depending on that approval or denial at the ZBA, that regardless of that, that we would be able to do this at a staff level if we had to come back, rather than having to go to the ZBA and then having to come back to the HPC and resubmit. Again, we prefer to do that at a staff level. Are there any questions?
Any questions for the petitioner?
Kathy Levine, a quick question. Can you, is there storage in the attic space?
There used to be. The original design, which I don't think that we have on, I don't think that it's on
here. That was
here.
The tower. That was the
but
storage
the towers,
space.
I mean, the,
there was a tower
the,
that was
the
in the back.
The height of the roof, there's certainly space in that roof line for storage. Is there a pull-down stair to access that roof?
There's not. It's not really. It's only about 5 feet after structure. There's not much
space. I have 5 foot of storage
and
in my attic.
The owner was hoping to actually vault the ceiling, so that would, a dormer there, and it
That's
wouldn't really, would
I,
really work.
I gotcha. It's a vaulted ceiling.
Right. Anybody else? Any questions?
Katrina Hornung, so what is the percentage of the lot coverage as of now with the 737?
It's so right here. How do you? So we are at lot coverage is the total lot coverage is 50%, including the all structures on the site,
okay.
The principal and that. So we did not exceed that number.
Thank you.
And we did not exceed the number of 40% of the primary principal dwelling or building.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else got anything? I mean, my only thing with this is a personal preference about wanting 37 square feet for a three-car garage, which is it's becoming the proliferation of these oversized three-car garage accessory dwelling units to eke out every single foot of square footage. And you know, we have a limit, and as people keep on trying to push against this limit, say, well, I only need another 37 square feet, and therefore I'm looking for a variance on it. And then at what point do we stop offering, you know, going forward and pushing that boundary? Because if we approve it again for this gentleman today, we are then looking at approving the next person who wants 42 square feet extra over what they're, or 50. And so on and so forth. It's kind of that continuing encroachment of what the criteria says.
Kirsten Connor, but to the applicant, you are amenable to taking it back down to the 700. You're just asking for staff review. Is that what I heard?
Well, we'd like to get it approved for the 737. If we were to go to the ZBA and it were to be approved by them, we would like to be able to come back without having to resubmit to the HPC again. We'd like to be approved in case if they do support that, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. We have any other questions? Then I'll open it up for board discussion. Thank you, sir. Oh, no, public comment? Anybody in the public wish to make a comment? Okay. Board discussion. Jeff?
No comments.
Pat?
So are we asking him to go back down or keep it
where
he's
asking for an exemption to go up to 737, which I'll ask him for our approval prior to going to ZBA to get their approval to come back here to meet whatever requirements. And he's actually asking that it does get done at staff review level so that he doesn't have to come back in front of the panel again.
Okay.
Kirsten Connor, I agree with you, Darren. I think it's important to try and keep to the ordinance if there's not really a actual viable reason and it's just more of a personal preference.
My
comment.
It's just space.
Yeah.
640 square. Yeah. And the economical way to build one of these units is 16 by 32 because it's the least amount of beams. And people are just looking for, you know, they want to grow and grow, but you can do something just as good in 640 square feet as you can in 737.
Kathy Ledine, I agree with staff and I agree with the board. There's an ordinance in place. I studied Oregon for
it. Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Anybody else got anything to offer? If not, I will at this moment entertain a motion.
Katrina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Lynch Associate Architects 24005264 COA 625 West 37th Street with the following condition that the square footage be brought down to 700 feet. Does it need to be reviewed by staff still then? No. Okay. All right. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance. And recommend denial of the ZBA for a variance from the standard because the because the building footprint is over 700 square feet.
Pat Richardson, second.
Jeff.
Approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Captain Labana, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, petition of Ethos Preservation, 240053. I know you have to recuse yourself.
Kirsten Connor, I recuse myself from this, and I owe you a recusal form brief.
COA 240053 12 808 West 42nd Street.
The applicant is requesting approval to carry out rehabilitation work and alterations at 808 West 42nd. The home in question was constructed in 2014 as a Habitat for Humanity house. It was also, so it is listed as a non-contributing structure. Staff has three primary concerns with this project, the first being the attached garage. Between information provided by the applicant and information found by staff, there were some examples of attached garages in this district. A total of nine specific examples were found within Tyler Brownville. Seven were on non-contributing buildings, two were on contributing buildings. The standards for visual compatibility in this case, remember, are be compared to contributing buildings and not non-contributing buildings. The staff finds that a attached garage is not visually compatible. There are numerous attached carports in this district, but not that many attached garages. If the board finds that an attached garage is visually compatible, we would recommend bringing it down to one story instead of having it two, because all the known examples are one story in height. The second concern is with the width of the property once that addition is added to the home. Staff looked at all the contributing buildings on a particular block of this home in Tyler Brownville, as well as a portion of the surrounding blocks. May look at the area in this red square. Of those, only one building was greater than 50 feet in width. Three were between 40 and 50 feet in width. This home, with the additions added, will be 52 feet, 3 inches. So it'll be wider than the contributing structures in the immediate vicinity. So staff finds that that part of the project is not visually compatible. There are also some concerns about the transparency and whether some of the elevations met that 30% rule. So the applicant should either confirm that that standard is met or apply for a special exception if they cannot add the proper amount of openings. There are also some additional details that staff will need for this project, and those will be addressed in the conditions. With that, staff recommends a continuance of this project to meet the concerns found on the screen. Does the board have any questions?
Any questions for staff?
I'm just going to chime in quickly. Kelly did a great job on this, and we spent a lot of time talking about this as staff, and as Kelly noted, she did this wonderful analysis of the width of buildings, but also in terms of the visual compatibility. We couldn't really find examples where you had the main block of the building here, where you then had two wings that were taller. I don't know how to articulate that. It's architectural composition is a little unusual. So that was also, you know, one of the concerns, as Kelly noted.
All right. Anybody have any questions for staff? No? Hearing none, is the petitioner present? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Thought we had it up. Thanks. Good afternoon. Kim Campbell with Ethos Preservation. We are requesting today the approval from this board to alter a non-contributing building at West 42nd Street. As Kelly mentioned, this building is the home of Ms. Sanja Capers, who's here with us today, and her family. She purchased this home from Habitat for Humanity right after its construction in 2014. And the purpose of this project is to expand this home so that she, her son, and her grandchildren can continue to live here. Essentially, this building is non-contributing in pretty much any way that it could be in this district. Not only was it built in 2014, it is already wider than pretty much everything else. As the staff has pointed out, if you look at the form here in these photographs, you can kind of see that it already has two masses and a hyphen. It is, as Ms. Capers actually recently told me, the architect literally said this is unlike anything else in town when it was built. So it has no precedence around there. And nothing certainly on, this particular block. The building's non-contributing form is what is particularly relevant to our proposal and our ask of you today, because this existing structure makes it impossible to alter the form of this building to something that looks like it, because nothing looks like it. We have no precedence in this neighborhood. So here again is the front. You can see the couple different units. This is the other view looking at the front there. You can see really clearly how it almost reads like two shotgun houses, as opposed to a single massing there. I wanted to put the, let me zoom out a little. I wanted to put the footprint up on here so you can again see that this really is not like any other building in the neighborhood. This matters because the lack of precedent, it seems to be, the report seems to be indicating that the lack of a precedent in the neighborhood is how we're defining visual compatibility. You must have a contributing example for something to be visually compatible rather than meeting the principles as outlined in the ordinance with reference to contributing buildings in the district. Again, I'm going to beat this horse dead for you. I want to show you that there are no examples that are visually related to this, and therefore to alter it, we're going to have to do something based on the principles and not on an exact building. This, of course, is the map of the block here. There are 18 structures remaining on this block. Only 8 of these are contributing resources. I'd like to quickly walk through them all. This is 802 West 42nd Street, and on each one, you can see a picture of it, and you can also see it circled here. This is 816 West 42nd Street, perhaps the building with most in common. It is quite wide. You'll also note that while it's a carport, not a garage, it is two stories. 818 West 42nd Street, cute bungalow, but not like our house. 820 West 42nd Street, 824 West 42nd Street, 801 West 42nd Street. We're, again, back at the other end of the block here now. 805 West 42nd Street, and 815 West 42nd Street. So I think pretty clearly there is nothing in our block that looks like Ms. Capers' home. If we were going to go through the district, we're not going to find that as well. So we acknowledge that the proposed alteration does not have a matching contributing example, but we contend that it is visually compatible with the surrounding contributing context. The materials are approved, visually compatible materials. I mentioned before the building currently reads more like two buildings that sit next to each other rather than a single building. Our proposal would have that read as three buildings that sit next to each other. That is, of course, a strategy we use to break up height and mass all the time. And in fact, in an earlier petition today on 536 East Gwinnett Lane, staff was suggesting that they would work with an applicant to break up massing in that way on a potential project. That's what we're proposing to do here. As the report did note, there are front-facing garages in the district, so we feel that it does meet the visual compatibility criteria as laid out. Again, I'd like to reiterate, if we define visual compatibility as something that has to have a contributing example, then we are saying we cannot alter this home since we don't have a matching contributing example because nothing like it exists. The ordinance does not define visual compatibility as a match to historic resources for new construction and alteration. In fact, when we go to the beginning of Section 710.10a, it states, the intent of these standards is to ensure appropriate new construction, additions, and alterations within the Cuyler-Brownville Historic District. They are not intended to promote copies of architectural designs of the past, but to encourage contemporary designs that protect and complement existing contributing resources. We feel that this proposal is a contemporary design that is visually compatible and is something different and complements the surrounding existing contributing context, which again is quite limited. We are asking today that this board approve our request for these alterations with we recognize some additional information we need to provide to confirm the transparency and or visibility of that west elevation on the first floor. We need to submit some additional information on the muttons showing that they're no larger than 7/8 inch. The mechanical equipment will be within the yard, which is screened by a fence already, but we're happy to drop that into the plans. And then the new doors, again, will be wood and glass, but we're happy to submit that spec for them. I'd like to note that the depth of all eaves was a condition as well, but that is already shown on the rear elevation. All of them are 12 inches or greater for that. Before I end today, I would like to invite Ms. Sandra Capers up to speak a little bit. I know this board is often curious and ask why. Why do we have to have this? Why do you need this now? So I'd like for her to speak a little bit about why she is seeking to alter her home in this way.
Good afternoon. My name is Sandra Capers, owner of 808 West 42nd Street.
Good afternoon.
First of all, before I got my house built at 808 West 42nd Street, I didn't want to live around there. Because the west side to me was bad and there's always something going on. Prior to me moving there, I can say the police had my area blocked off 3 times because there was a shooting or something going on. I really was scared. I moved around there and the neighborhood has really changed since then. It's gentrified. It's more, you know, quieter. I guess they locked up a bunch of people or whatever. But since then, it's much better. I have two sons. Since the last 3 years, one of my sons has had 3 children here, 1, 2, and 3. So we've outgrown the house. There's no room for my grandkids to sleep. We have anything. So the reason I wanted to add on, because I want to, the upstairs I was going to give to my son so he can have that because the way rent is nowadays, he can't afford anything out there. And then we'll have the downstairs. Plus, when my mother, she's 77 now, planning for the future, she's not going to go to a nursing home. She's going to come with me. So I'm trying to have more room so that when she comes as well. And I appreciate if y'all take that into consideration and grant my over today.
Thank you.
We're happy to take any questions y'all may have.
Okay, so any questions for the petitioner?
Yeah, a couple. So
Jeff, say your name.
Oh, Jeff Notrika. How long has the petitioner been in the house?
Since 2014. She is the only owner.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Okay, thank you.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kathy?
Are we in board discussion?
Yes, ma'am. Questions for the petitioner. No, sorry.
Katrina Hornung, not a question, but I just appreciate the amount of information you bring to all of your petitions.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm guessing there's no further questions. Is there anybody online that would like to make public comment or anybody in the room that would like to make a public comment? Hearing none, we will go into board discussion.
And I would just like to know, if you indulge me quickly. Okay. So we did not, just to clarify, we weren't saying that this building has to necessarily mimic but the ordinance says it has to be visually compatible with the contributing buildings. And as I noted, Kelly did a wonderful job in doing analysis. I think you'd be hard pressed to come up with this architectural composition, I think, in any of our historic districts. And so that's where the concern, we greatly appreciate the owner being here and her need for additional space. Staff is not at all trying to say that the house can't be expanded. We just think that the manner in which the expansion is being proposed warrants some further study. So I just want to be clear about that.
Kathy Levine, I do have a question to staff. Can you bring up the plot, the lot lines? So my question to staff, this is a lane, correct? A public right-of-way?
Yes, ma'am.
I thought it was a requirement in the ordinance that garages must be along the public right-of-way.
So we discussed that as staff. Currently, they do have a driveway coming off of 42nd. And given that was existing, we thought that in theory it could be okay if there were other examples of
a similar type of garage. So, but it is possible to put the garage and comply with the ordinance.
Yes, ma'am.
From the lane.
Can we look at the front elevation again of the proposed? And then look at the, so here's the front elevation, and then which is the existing elevation? And that's the,
yeah, it's really hard.
So if we're looking at it, so the right hand, if you're looking to the right of the current existing elevation, there's a second floor addition being added to that right hand side, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So my question, I guess, to the petitioner as much as anything else is, why wasn't there just a proposal to lift everything up to a second floor and then have a single floor, a single story garage on the side, which then would be compatible, essentially just making this a two-story home that is one and then a garage, which would make it feel quite a little, you'd lose the roof line of the main entryway and add a second level, therefore giving it more of a continuous look rather than this almost castle-like chateau. Yeah, that would be my question to the petitioner, but yeah, if that's possible, or that would, it would even be feasible.
Commissioner, would you start at the beginning of that?
So I'm looking at it because I'm looking at it, it kind of almost has a, like a chateau appearance with the two sides elevated above the lower level. And you've gone up a level over one side of it because, you, as we were initially talking about, the current existing status is, it's like two shotgun houses side by side. Is that, wouldn't there be a way to create it so it was one continuous two-floor home with a single-story garage?
Potentially, the current design, if we go to the floor plans, allows, as Ms. Capers mentioned, so she has a son and grandchildren that live with her, as well as the potential for a mother-in-law suite. So those are separated a little bit for that. And that's not possible within the existing. So if we have the two stories over the center, you know, everybody lives together there, which is not the ideal for them. I will say that moving the garage to the lane, I just want to note that Ms. Capers has done some really beautiful landscaping back there. And while I know that's not a thing that y'all always consider, again, that's where her grandchildren play. So to meet all the requirements of that is, you know, not really what they're going for. And I think I also forgot to mention that in terms of an enclosed garage as opposed to a park, a carport, that is a security concern, which is the desire for that. Yeah.
Hence why I'm asking about the single level garage, which is visually compatible with the rest of the neighborhood, and a two-story building, which wouldn't feel quite as imposing as far as a possibility. Okay, thank you.
Kathy LeBron, I have one more question for staff. Is it not a requirement that the parking is on the lane? Is it not in our regulations that parking must be accommodated on the lane despite the existing driveway? It's not a garage. It's just a driveway. Is that not – that? Would they not have to go for a special exemption?
Yeah.
Parking must be accommodated by the lane.
Yes.
That's what they're
Yes. Doing. The parking should be off the lane. Yes.
But that's a requirement in the ordinance.
Right. Okay. My understanding is they have existing parking already off of the street. We can't.
That's not a garage.
The driveway, which is, yeah.
No, I'm just saying we can't force them to get rid of what they have.
No, they can keep the driveway, but right. can you put a garage there as, that's the question that you're
right.
trying to convey is that if you're going to create parking, as far as it covered, it would be from the lane.
Ideally, it should be, yes, from the lane. You're correct, Kathy.
It's in the ordinance.
Yes.
And
it should
special
be.
Special exception. If we.
I'm going to let Kelly.
I was pulling up the ordinance in the process. It does say for standalone and two-family dwellings where a site has access to a lane, the lane shall be the sole means of the vehicular access to the site. So they would need a special exception if the design was approved.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any further questions? Is there anybody for public comment? No? Then we can enter board discussion, I guess.
Well, what is staff's recommendation?
Line up right now, just one moment.
does the petitioner feel like, given the extra time, they can work through some of these?
So if you will go back to our proposal, we're happy to bring some additional detail back to staff on some of these items that are missing there. I do think we have a concern, though, that just being continued and told to make it more compatible with the neighborhood, there is nothing like it. So I'm either creating a two-story massing with an overhang with this hyphen that doesn't look like anything else. I'm afraid that we're going to get stuck in this same spot. So, again, we're asking for you to approve with some of those details that we need to do, and I'm sure we can pull that up as well if we need to. Mm-hmm. Those details coming back to staff, to be clear.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it would be a tragedy not to figure out some way to make this thing work.
Okay. Pat?
I agree with Jeff.
Okay.
No.
Kathy Levina. I'm going to stick with the ordinance here. I think the garage and the parking access needs to be off the lane. This building was constructed in 2014 prior to the HPC even being established. It is a non-contributing building in my, I'm sorry, Habitat for Humanity. It is quite unique, but the width is already not to the standard of the historic properties that we are holding our buildings now to be compatible with. And to exaggerate that width is a true tragedy for the entire neighborhood. The width needs to not be exaggerated. It needs to remain the same. The garage, I think, needs to be separated from the main house, located along the lane per the ordinance. That's where I'm going to start, and I'm just going to continue to think while we just other people discuss.
Katrina Hornung. Well, I understand the need for more space. I do believe that the garage and the mother-in-law suite could be repositioned so that it is in compliance with the ordinance. And yes, that would minimize that backyard space, but yeah, I think that might need to be reconfigured.
Okay. Any further comment?
Kathy Levine, I'm a master gardener and I appreciate landscape, but I also appreciate the Kyler Brownville neighborhood.
Pat, any further comments? Jeff, any further comments?
No.
Okay.
Kathy Levine, I'm going to make one more comment because I haven't used all my minutes. I think this is too big to take to staff. I think it needs to be, if it is continued, it needs to be continued to the Historic Preservation Commission versus at a staff level.
Okay. So we're going to have a motion. Well, we're going to do a continuation. I believe that we need to set some parameters around it. So essentially if you're asking for it to be continued because you don't feel that this is comprehensive enough and we've got some design concerns regarding lane and scale and mass as far as the width of the proposed design, then we need to kind of have a level of something that the petitioner can come back with and look at a redesign if that's going to be even possible. Now, I'm going to say to you, ma'am, the owner, I completely understand where you're coming from. I know you had this opportunity with this great house and your family circumstances have changed and you value your neighborhood and community. That is incredible and it's wonderful that, you know, the neighborhood's grown around you to where you feel that this is where you want your grandbabies to grow up and you want to bring your mom to when she needs to live with you. I think that's incredible. But again, it's one of those things that we're between a rock and a hard place because we've got a set of parameters that we need to be adhered to as well. So your needs
and the needs of the community. It's kind of, it's a weird struggle. The carriage house going at the back. A side yard is not the same as a backyard, but it's still fenced in. You know, it's still a safe place for kids. There are ways that hopefully we can come to a situation where you can get 90% most of your needs met.
Katrina Hornung, question for Pat and Jeff. Are you both okay with the width of the building, or is that something that you guys would like to see reduced?
You know, I think mine is more of a broad stroke opinion. I think getting someone in a house like this, and then being able to maintain it for 10 years is very impressive. And I think that, you know, the details of what they do, I understand, but I think we need to maybe stretch on this one to keep them in this house.
I went and did a site visit. So just to have somebody to have a nice looking home in that area would give other people the encouragement and want them to come back to that area too. So, you know, I commend her for even being there, you know, because when you look around, you know, it can be discouraging from what you grew up with to what you see today, you know, and it sounds to me like she's trying to do the right thing by coming back home, building up the area, you know, showing some pride in the area, you know, and yes, there are some personal situations that are putting her in that position, but still, you know, I commend her for being there.
All right, folks, somebody make a motion.
Katrina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation approve the petition of Ethos Preservation 24005312 COA 808 West 42nd Street with the following conditions. Staff recommendations: 1, consider redesigning the garage by either reducing the height or completely detaching the garage from the main house. 3, confirm the open transparency for all first floor elevations visible from the public right of way and add additional openings where the standard is not met. And 4, provide the details A through D because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Jeff Notrico will second that.
Thanks, Jeff.
I approve.
Pat Richardson approved.
Kathy.
Kathy Lebrano denied.
Katrina Hornung approve.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Right, next. Okay, moving on to 516 Siler Avenue. Amendment to 23001783 COA.
This one is solar panels at special exception.
Okay.
So this is the applicant's requesting a special exception to install 9 solar panels on the roof of 516 Siler Avenue. This one was before you last month. Staff had recommended approval, but with the condition that they needed to apply for the special exception because it's a contributing building.
Mm-hmm.
So just as a refresher, this is looking dead on. This is the side where the panels are proposed to be installed, and from this angle, you would see it. So just to go through, the special exceptions for the standard that reads alternative energy source devices may be permitted on contributing resources, provided they're not visible from the street and do not damage or obscure any character-defining features. For the special exception criteria, one of the goals of Savannah 100% includes having all electricity in Savannah generated from safe, clean, renewable energy by 2035. The use of solar energy is in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan, particularly in the chapter Preservation and Climate Resiliency, which discusses sustainability and allowing for upgrades to energy efficiency of historic buildings. The installation of the solar panels would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, and function. Regarding the appearance, the panels would be visible from Siler Avenue, but not to a degree that would negatively impact the aesthetic of a streetcar historic district. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request to install 9 solar panels on the roof of 516 Siler Avenue to allow the applicant to approve as requested because the work meets the standards and approve the special exception request for the installation of solar panels as requested because the project meets the special exception criteria. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for staff?
Katrina Hornung, did we discuss what the process would be to make it so that it wouldn't be a special exemption so that people, you know, trying to put solar on their homes didn't have to pay the whatever fee it is for a special exemption?
To change the ordinance. That's going to go through subcommittee and be submitted. Did we talk about that right at the last meeting? And we have to submit it to council for approval? Yes.
We do have that on our radar.
It is a priority.
I feel like buying it. Is there 9 solar panels or 11?
Maybe. I guess we can confirm with the applicant. It says 9 modules on this, but we can confirm with.
I think if they can put 11, even better.
All right. Any other questions for staff? Is the petitioner available? Please step forward, state your name for the record.
Hi, I am Nicole Lee, owner of B-Smart Home Solutions, the solar installer for this project.
Okay. So, question, 9 or 11?
It is 11.
Thank you.
Kirsten Connor, I just wanted to say again, I'm sorry that you have to go through the variance, but I love solar panels.
I feel like Bonnet. Height are those solar panels?
We discussed this at the last meeting, I think.
Solar panels are different. I'm just asking what the heights are.
Roof, they will probably add about a good 5 inches sitting off the roof.
Is that the lowest?
Yes, it is the lowest. Yes, it's a racking system that is mounted to the roof, and they're laying flat on the roof.
What would be the difference if you push those back?
We are not able to push it back because it will not produce the energy needed for the client to get the savings that the client is looking to receive per her contract.
We reviewed this as far as at the last meeting when we did the review and asked for the special exemption. The tree coverage in the back doesn't allow for the full coverage.
In the rear, correct. Yeah. But I'm saying push that back. I mean, I looked at the trees.
Yeah,
I looked at the trees. There's a 1-story house next door. Yeah. There are no trees there. No trees between the buildings. I guess my issue is how is it? I mean, why can you get 3 foot 6 feet, the requirement, and not 5 feet? I mean, I just haven't seen the study. I haven't seen the study that shows and defines that the tree coverage is going to be that detrimental if you push it 5 feet versus 3 foot 6. 5 feet, at least the solar panels, and I'm all for solar. I'm all for alternative energy, but I'm also for historic preservation. And I would like to see those panels pushed back. So when you're walking down the street, the solar panels aren't
ultimately
not confronting the solar panel.
But Kathy, they're not permanent fixtures anyway. They can be removed. They do not destroy.
They're not going to be removed.
And that's our future. And honestly, as we move forward, the trend is going to be that we're going to see more and more solar panels.
But there are also solar panels that are disguised as shingles.
Kirsten Connor.
There's a lot of possibilities, how it's best for the neighborhood and the building.
And at this point in time, this is the most affordable option for a neighborhood like this. You know, if you wait for technology to catch up, that could be 25 years from now. And we're on a zero emission for the city of Savannah. That's one of their other orders.
Shingles are already in existence. The technology is there. But we all know that.
But cost may be
pretty. I don't know if the technology is there or not.
I'll bring it in.
Then bring it in.
They actually have solar panels in Spanish. My question is, what's the difference between 3-6 and 5 feet pushing them back so they're not so blatantly in the view of
we discussed with the petitioner at the previous meeting.
But I guess I haven't seen proof.
So
Kirsten Connor, I think you would need to do your own research, Kathy.
So at this point,
but they determined why these solar panels need to be there in that location. Where is it here? I don't think I'm asking for a lot. They've already done their homework.
Right.
How is 3-foot-6 or 5 foot? How is that different?
It loses the amount of power you can generate to make it cost.
Okay, well then show it to me. Show me the study.
We asked for this petitioner to come back to this meeting with the special exemption. So the information was requested at the last presentation.
Oh.
But at this point, we're looking at it, we've asked questions. She's provided the answers that she was asked to provide at the last meeting.
My questions weren't answered. I think I had the same questions at the last meeting.
You probably did.
I'm sure I did.
So does anybody else have any other questions for the petitioner? No? Okay. Is there anybody that would like to make a public comment? Hearing none, I will open it up for board discussion.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Jeff?
Jeff Notrekin, no comment.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, no comment.
Okay. We know where you stand, Kathy.
Okay.
So if nobody has any comments, I would like to have a motion put on the floor.
Katrina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Be Smart Home Solutions 24004732 COA 516 Siler Avenue. Per staff recommendations, as submitted, and approve the special exemption request of solar panels as requested because the project meets the special exception criteria as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Jeff Notrekin, second.
Jeff, you vote?
Yes, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy?
Kathy Levine, deny.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Next. 16 East 39th Street. After the fact gate, special exemption request. Oh, we don't know. Sorry, is that the right one? No, sorry. Petition of Homestead Architecture. 24004688 COA. 225 West 40th.
You skipped.
Did I skip one?
You did.
I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. Petition of Real Estate Investment Savannah. 24004728 COA. 536 Siler Avenue. Amendment to 23001783 COA.
So again, the applicant is requesting approval from a previously approved COA. As you all likely remember, this project was originally heard at the May 2024 meeting due to work that was done differently than what was approved. At that meeting, the commission approved some of the elements, but not all of them.
The elements that commission denied were the size and configuration of the windows on both the primary building and the accessory unit, the vinyl privacy fence, the hood and canopy elements over the rear door of the primary building, over the first story door on the outbuilding, as well as the second story door on the outbuilding, the configuration of the front porch foundation, and the design of the first floor elevation of the accessory structure facing Siler Avenue. The applicant has since come back with as-built drawings. Per the drawings, the overall footprint and height of both structures were built per plan. So staff was not going to address that in the discussion, since there is no evidence that these elements are any different than what was previously approved. So again, staff has a couple of issues. First being the front porch foundation. The plans show them as having express piers. Again, as we previously saw, foundations was built without that. So the applicant will need to correct this if they have not done so already. Other elements include another other issue being this kind of canopy hood element. It is very cantilevered, which you don't really see on residential buildings in this district. So staff recommends either that it's redesigned or completely removed from the project. And the final kind of big issue that staff has was with those second story windows facing Siler Avenue. As constructed, the windows are square in design. The configuration is not commonly seen within this district on primary facades. Also, the standards require that windows be taller than they are wide. It is worth noting that there are multiple dimensions provided within the staff report. The dimensions from the floor plans were provided in the as-built and stamped drawings. They were provided as inches, so staff converted them into feet. There were also dimensions pulled from the elevation drawings, from the as-built, and from the stamped drawings. These were determined by staff using a ruler element within Adobe. Staff recognizes that there were some issues with the previously approved stamped drawings in that there were inconsistencies in the drawings that staff did not catch originally. While staff recognizes that there was an oversight, staff finds that the windows should be reconstructed as they were shown on the elevation drawings as the previously stamped drawings. With that, staff recommends approval of the amendment to the previous COA for 536 Siler Avenue for the following changes as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. One, the hood and canopy elements over the rear doors in the main building and over the first floor pedestrian door on the outbuilding. Number two, this one was worded slightly differently right now compared to earlier drafts of the staff report, and it reads, the window configuration and the window dimensions on the first floor windows are front facade and all the windows on the side and rear elevations of the primary building, the front porch steps and the privacy fence, and recommend denial of the amendment for the following elements as they're not visually compatible and do not meet SLET standards. These are the hood and canopy element over the second story door on the outbuilding, dimensions of the second story windows in the front facade, and the foundation configuration for the front porch. That's it. If the board has any questions, feel free to ask.
So you're recommending that the plastic privacy fence remain in place now?
So they provided a new design for the privacy fence that's now constructed of wood and meets the standards.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions for staff? No? Could the petitioner step forward and state their name for the record?
Hi, good day. My name is Ina Adams. Thank you so much, staff, for such a thorough research which was done. And I really appreciate all the work and that you allow me to be present here again to look at my case, this case, and definitely the fence material, which is vinyl, will be removed, replaced. That's actually this amendment to approve the wooden fence. Other recommendations, actually the foundation configuration that was addressed, additional bricks were added and reconfigured. hood and canopy element, fair enough. And, you know, it's pain of my heart with the windows, as there was a mistake made. And I do take responsibility, as essentially, you know, I realize the mistake made, that, you know, communication with the staff would be the best to go through, but it was caught, you know, late on in the project when everything is finished and those windows are, you know, in place and everything around them. So if that's the commission decision, well, just have to abide and deal with it. It's just been some months that we tried to rethink the whole project. We went back to architect. We did understand that the mistake between the plans where there were numbers and the elevations, there were inconsistencies. And we went with numbers, not with the elevations. And the staff actually provided the, they have a tool to measure the windows on the elevations, and we realized that those were two different numbers. If there is possibility to save that, I just feel we're on the same page. All I wanted for Savannah is to look beautiful, decent, to change neighborhoods for the better. And I believe I never wanted anything else. Like all the projects that I ever conducted, I knew that the quality is the main parameter, and my logo actually is make Savannah beautiful, you know. And if you believe that's, you know, technically those windows are taller than wide, but just the look of it doesn't produce that, you know, that feel, but technically they are wider, taller than wide. It's up to you, and okay. I appreciate all your time. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
I have a question for staff. I believe this petition came to us before. Has there been any changes? Do we have photographs of what this looks like now?
I have not been by recently.
Has anything changed since last time?
The only thing that I've noticed is addition of some lights, but I have not stopped and actually looked at the project, so I'm not sure.
So the windows are still that?
Yeah, so the big elements are the same. Some of the detail, I'm not sure, but the big elements are the same.
Although at this point, it is still our approval is denying that the, you know, that the second story windows, that they will have to be replaced to get the certificate of appropriateness. So because they haven't been changed out in its current recommendation by staff, the fence hasn't been taken down yet, but it will be taken down and replaced with a wooden fence.
Okay.
All right. Anybody else have any questions for staff or the petitioner?
Katrina Hornung, didn't we say that all of the windows had to be changed in the previous COA? And now we're just saying just the second floor?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
In the previous meeting, staff had said only those front windows. Mm-hmm. Board decided that all the windows need to be changed out. Staff still feels that the side and rear windows do meet the standards, so we are submitting that recommendation. But the board feels otherwise. You can choose.
Understood. Thank you.
And just to add to what Kelly was saying, so when we looked at it, and Jeff, to answer your question, we have been by the site. Obviously, we checked to make sure that they put up their placards. So the fence will be replaced by wooden fence, as the applicant noted. Our major concern, and I think you all had raised this, was the front elevation, these second floor windows. As Kelly noted, the other windows do meet the standards, and we acknowledge that there were inconsistencies, but in the stamp drawings between the elevation drawings and the floor plans. So we tried to reach a compromise. We think the applicant has tried to meet us, meet you all, kind of, and allow this project to move forward and be visually compatible. So we think if we can address those windows and those other elements that are noted in the staff recommendation, we kind of feel it's a fair compromise here for all parties involved.
Okay. Any other questions, folks? If not, is there a member of the public that would like to make a comment?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. I'm going to reiterate the same comment that we made last time. Our ARC still has significant concerns over this project and over the work that has been completed versus what was originally approved, especially over the windows and not just the ones on the front facade, all of them. They should be held to the same standard as everyone else, and we would like to express support of staff's, most of staff's recommendations. Except for the windows. Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that wish to make a comment? Hearing none, we will now enter board discussion. Oh, sorry. Are you good? Okay. Does anybody wish to make any further statements?
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, I agree with staff recommendations, but I'm on the fence about the windows. Even with, from what I understand, and I'm looking at the dimensions that the staff prepared, even with just going off of the floor plan, the applicant still strayed pretty far from what was shown dimension-wise for the windows on the floor plan of the previously approved drawings. So I think we, as a board, need to think about that.
Kathy?
Kathy Levina, I commend the applicant's new privacy fence. The wood is certainly a better addition to the neighborhood. I agree with the windows needing to be in compliance with what the original drawings were. Even though it's not the primary facade, the east facade, west facade, that is still a primary facade and is seen by the public right away. So I would like to see the the east facade windows, at least, return to the configuration, that was originally proposed. It was the side of elevation windows, 5'4" by 3', and what was installed was 5'3" by 1.83". So that's significantly smaller.
Okay. Katrina.
Katrina Hornung. I'm going to go with staff recommendations on this one.
All right. Any other comments, folks? Hearing none, let's have a motion, please.
Kirsten Connor, I'm going to make a comment, not a motion. It sounds like, Kathy, you somewhat agree with what I have said or all the way. And the other board members sound like they're kind of with staff recommendations. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. I still stand with my comment that no matter whether or not they went off the floor plan or the elevations, the dimensions were still, some of them were very vastly different than what they were approved for. So I'm leaning towards requiring them to replace all or at least the front and east facade.
Kathleen Brown, I think we have given a lot and we have made a lot of compromises on this project already. The windows are a defining feature. We did approve, I believe, 1/1, correct? We approved their 1/1 versus what was originally drawn as well.
If I remember right, those are the size and the configuration. So you would want her to go back to 2/2 versus the 1/1 that were installed.
previously.
But again, I agree with Kristen.
Pat Richardson. I agree with Kirsten and Kathy that if nothing else, the windows at least need to be consistent or all the way around. So I do believe that all the windows should be replaced. I mean, we said this before, so I don't think we should be backpedaling.
Jeff, I agree with those comments about the windows.
All right, throw it down. Throw it down. Come on.
Kirsten Connor, I'd like to make a motion. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of, that is the correct one that I'm doing.
536 Siler.
Yeah.
240047.
536 Siler Avenue, COA number 2300.
Your amendment to 230. The current is 2400.
Oh, I apologize. COA number 240047 28, amendment 2, COA number 2301783 COA, with staff's recommendations minus number 2. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criterion standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, and deny the amendment with staff recommendations 1 through 3, and add number 4 being to replace all of the windows that are out of compliance with the stamped approved COA drawings.
Pat Richardson, a second.
All right. Katrina Hornig, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Natrika, approve.
Thank you. Motion passes. Ma'am, it is now passed. That is the decision of the commission. Ma'am, the motion has passed. Ma'am, the motion is now passed and the discussion is closed. Moving on to number 12 on today's agenda, petition of Homestead Architecture, 2400468 COA, 205 West 40th Street, new construction small parts 1 and 2, variance non-contributing demolition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting approval to construct an accessory dwelling unit at 225 West 40th Street. The project also includes the demolition of an existing non-contributing garage and a variance for the standard that reads accessory dwelling units building size, the building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal dwelling, not to exceed 700 square feet, to allow for square footage that exceeds 40% of the building footprint to a total of 49.6% of the footprint of the principal building. The maximum square footage being requested is 675 feet, which is still below the 700. Going over some of the information, clearly this was here last month, where the decision did have two conditions where it was continued. The first condition was provide context drawings showing the height of the ADU and how it relates to the surrounding buildings. So the applicant has provided this information in the updated submittal packet. The height of the proposed ADU would be 24 feet, which is shorter than the principal building and the neighboring accessory building directly next to it.
The second condition was explore options of minimizing the footprint of the ADU to be closer to 40% of the square footage of the house. The applicant is still requesting the same variance, but is providing further information to justify the request, stating, "We feel that the existing neighborhood fabric supports this carriage house design, its size, and its placement. It is consistent with the existing block density in the proportional footprint area requested, is consistent with the fabric of the adjacent properties." The applicant cited a few nearby properties to support this, directly across Jefferson Street at 301 West 40th. There is an ADU that is approximately 900 square feet and 65% of the primary residence over by 346 square feet. 2410 Jefferson Street next door is not an accessory dwelling unit. It's at 224 West 41st Street. However, its location is consistent with an ADU placement on the block and is significantly larger than the current proposed ADU in massing and height. At 306 West 40th Street, a recently approved ADU of 700 square feet was over the 40% allowable by 22%, so it was 62% over an HPC recommended approval of the variance request for that. So just I'm not going to go through every single variance criteria since we discussed it last time, but staff found the variance would not confer special privilege. As noted previously, there are other accessory structures in the area that exceed the 40% rule, some of which have been approved after the ordinance changed with a variance. Further, the applicant notes that the additional 131 square feet of the ADU in no way adversely affects surrounding properties nor the community, but does allow for two off-street parking spots and an adequately sized long-term live-work tenant space above. I'll just also to just go back through. We had talked about the non-contributing demolition request last time, and just following the policy of documenting buildings, they have submitted the drawings and photographs of the existing structure. And the existing site plan and the proposed site plan. And just wanted to go through the elevations again. And with that, staff recommends to approve the request to construct an accessory dwelling unit at 225 West 40th Street, including the demolition of a non-contributing garage as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards, and recommend approval of a recommendation to the ZBA for a variance from the standard with Section 8.7 accessory structures and uses as follows. The building footprint of the ADU shall be a maximum of 40% of the building footprint of the principal dwelling, not to exceed 700 square feet, in order to allow an accessory dwelling unit percentage of 49.6% of the footprint of the principal dwelling because the variance criteria are met. Thank you.
What was the square footage of the ADU? Sorry.
It was 675.
Okay, and does that include that stairway and the porch?
I believe so. We can confirm with the applicant.
Okay. Because if that was eliminated and the stairway was put inside, it would probably fit under the ordinance. If the door.
We can check with them and okay. See.
All right. And the bump out was also probably another part of it that could be. Okay. All right. Any questions for staff folks? Hearing none, is the petitioner present? Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Pete Callejas of Homestead Architecture.
Afternoon, sir.
Here to answer any questions, but the first question, the stairs are not part of the footprint size according to the zoning.
Okay, that's what I wanted to clarify.
That's right. But we did explore some other floor plans, but what we had was less than 700 square feet. A standard one-bedroom apartment is somewhere between 600 and 800 square feet, so we're right in the middle. And We felt that what we have is perfectly appropriate. It's a nice size for a live work, long-term tenant type rental property, rental unit. And it's not inconsistent with the other units that are directly across the street, catty corner, and one that's about 200 feet away that was recently approved, as was just mentioned. It's the lot size is actually 200% of the minimum lot size requirement for this zone, so it's a larger lot than needed. The width is 100, not that it's that relevant, but it's 160% of the minimum width, so it is a larger lot. And the house on the lot is relatively small, so the actual footprint by the letter of the definition of footprint is only 1,360 square feet. So it's even though it's a two-story building, they only consider the first floor heated square feet. So that's what we have. That's what we're working with. And that's part of the reason why it happens to be 49% instead of 40%, but it is under the 700 square feet. So
my question, what would the size be if it was 40%? Just tell me what that number
what would the what?
If you had to go down to the 40%, what would that size be?
Oh,
because your bathroom.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Well, what's 40% of 544, which isn't large enough.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. Because that, you know, getting it down to that size does make.
But we wouldn't even be able to park two cars.
Well, it becomes problematic at that point as far as even living space. That is tight. So, and we have. As you noted, with special exemptions, we have in the past, large lot, slightly smaller house, we have made that exemption in this neighborhood. Okay, so thank you. Questions for the petitioner, anybody? No? Is there any members of the public that would like to make a statement? No?
May.
Okay, sure.
I'm the petitioner, David Massaros, one of the owners. Just wanted to introduce myself and thank you all for the opportunity. Just give you a little bit of background. I was not here last time. I had a family emergency, but my partner was here. And just so you know, I do respect what you all do, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. I am not a newcomer to the neighborhood. I think that appeals to some of y'all. My grandfather actually built the structure at 43rd and Jefferson. It was the Collins Plumbing Building. It's just three intersections down. And it was built in 1940, and they operated that till 2005. So coming back to the neighborhood, being there, it really is an honor to be in there and put a structure that we feel would function very nicely in the area and look appropriate as well. Mm-hmm. It's always a goal of ours. So I'd answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for the gentleman? Hearing none. There's no members of the public want to make a statement, so we'll enter board discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do any of our members want to make or discuss anything at this point?
To me.
Kirsten Connor, I'm in agreement with stuff.
Pat Richardson. We had talked last time about the depth of the garage. And the standard depth of a two-car garage is anywhere between 18 and 24 feet, and that can fit almost any vehicle. I understand the position that they're in, but how do you go from one to the next? Can I finish?
Go ahead.
Because when we denied the petitioner the special exemption on one property, and here we are. It's same situation. Do you need it? You don't need it if you comply with a standard size garage. The stairs and everything are outside that limit. And the reason I know this is because my garage is 25 feet deep and there's plenty of room.
What's the current size of this plan?
27.
No, I'm talking about the actual square footage of the unit.
Let's go back to the site plan.
The previous denial was for a one that exceeded 700 square feet as
but
well.
But this is exceeding the 40%.
But in the past we've done this. This is 675 square feet, which you know, if we go, as we said, if you go down to 540 square feet because the residence is smaller, then you're in a point where your usable space is compromised. Because to get down to,
I own units that are 300 square feet and people live in there fine.
I'm sure they do.
So you're making a special exemption here, but you didn't make it there. I don't understand the inconsistency.
And we have to, because it's also over the 700 square feet as far as the recommendation.
But it wasn't over the 40%.
Right.
So,
but that's because the difference is in this case is you're looking at a house that is smaller on a larger lot rather than the other way around, where you've got a large house and you're asking for a larger piece. So it is still under the footprint as far as the lot is concerned and under that zoning. So it's the issue is the house. So if he added, if the petitioner then says, well, I'm going to add another 500 square feet to my house, they could then have that carriage house.
They can, because that's how the ordinance is.
Where the absurdity comes into it. So yes, and he has the ability to do that. So they could always make that proposition. I'm going to build a screened in heated porch.
I think porches comply.
Well, if it's screened in and it's heat and it's heated space, it would do. Or it's not screened, windowed in, and it would be it would comply.
Pat Richardson, question for staff. So is it actually 27 by 25? Is that the dimensions of it?
I mean,
yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Moving on. We're on board discussion.
Kirsten Connor, I will reiterate, I am good with staff recommendations. I think every presentation that's brought to us needs to be considered with only its factors. And this is completely different from the previous application we had. And I agree wholeheartedly with what Darren has said. So I would like to move forward with approving staff recommendations, and that's my say.
Okay. Anybody else have any other statements or questions or anything else? Hearing none, let's move forward with a motion.
Jeff Nutrika, recommendation. We approve staff recommendations for 225 West 40th Street, petition number 24-004-688-COA. And?
Recommend approval of the Zoning Board of Appeals for variance.
Oh, yes. And recommend approval of the Zoning Board of Appeals for the variance.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Jeff?
Approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Happy Libina, deny.
Serena Hornung, approve.
Motion passes. All right. So now we need to look at approved staff reviews. There aren't any. So notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements. Right. We acknowledge that those have taken place. Do I need to have a motion to acknowledge those? No, yes.
Kirsten Connor, I motion to acknowledge those.
Okay, and a second?
Pat Richardson, second.
Okay. Let's have a vote on the proclamations and acknowledgements. Jeff? Approve?
Approve.
Yeah. Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Libina, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
All right, motion passes. Other business. Proposed ordinance reviews for staff, HBC staff reviews.
Thank you. I know you've had a long meeting. So we'll try to go through this, but it's important to give it the time it needs. As noted in the cover memo, we're doing an analysis of the existing process for staff reviews. And as I'm sure you've heard, there have been some concerns about some staff reviews recently. And when we looked at the existing ordinance for you all, we found that there was a need for a change. So I'm going to walk you through what the proposed change is. As I noted during the pre-meeting, the city of Savannah has been in touch with the SHPO. So before any of this would actually go into effect, if you all feel this should be moving forward, it would first have to go to MPC, it would have to go to City Council, but also the city is going to be sending any proposed changes to the State Historic Preservation Office. So, sorry, I don't know why it always jumps back to that, but. So. In terms of the existing way we had been handling projects, as I'm sure you're all aware, if you've filled out one of your HPC applications for your own homes or businesses, the application, which has since been changed, if you go on our website now, thanks to Bree, it's been changed. There was a section that said staff review. As you can see right before you, it said the following items are noted as being staff reviews as opposed to commission reviews. These were pretty standard items, roof repairment, replace, awnings, I won't read through all these, windows and doors, brick repointing, signs, fences, et cetera. However, when we looked at this existing ordinance, it says the historic in section 3.18.7, review by the Historic Preservation Commission, the Historic Preservation Commission shall review all material changes in appearance, except those are exempted in section 3.18.3. An application for certificate of appropriateness shall be submitted for such changes. So then we went, when we saw this, we went and we looked at section 3.18.3. What are the exemptions? General exterior maintenance or minor in-kind repairs. So basically not a lot. Any activity that is not visible, paved pathways, non-illuminated signs, less than 3 square feet in size, interior changes, color changes, as you know, you don't regulate color, vegetation, and the boarding of openings. So what we discovered, as you can see, is that as per the existing ordinance, what we had under staff reviews, which mirrored what is going on with the downtown historic district, windows, doors, roofs, et cetera, actually was not one of those items that could be delegated. So I hope that makes sense and we can go through all of this. What we are proposing is for section 3.18, certificate of appropriateness for local historic districts, review responsibility. The Historic Preservation Commission shall review all changes in appearance except those that are exempted in section 3.18.3 or delegated for review by the planning director. And we added a section 5 here, review by the planning director. This is pulled basically with some minor tweaks from HDBR. So the idea is that under staff decisions, a certificate of appropriateness may be approved by the city preservation officer for any 2 of the following items listed below. Same rule we have for downtown. If an application contains 3 or more of the following items, it may be referred to the HPC's next regularly scheduled meeting. Roof repair and roof replacement, stucco repair, brick repair. I'm not going to go through all these. You can read them. Window and door, et cetera. Fences. So the idea is to just make the existing ordinance in alignment with how we've been approving it. Until the time that if a change goes through, if you think this makes sense, what it means is that every application for window replacement, door replacement, fence, roof has to be filed as an application for you all, which means placards have to go up. They have to meet a filing deadline. We can put it on the consent agenda, which is be warned that the next meeting you're going to have probably a large consent agenda because we've already started this policy, thanks to Bree, where any new applications that are coming in, everything is a commission review. So even if you're replacing one window on your house, it is a commission review under the existing ordinance. So we staff do not feel that really makes a lot of sense in terms of applicants. We want to make sure, of course, that people meet the standards. But if you, as I think I said during the pre-meeting, if you have an asphalt shingle roof and you're replacing it with an architectural shingle roof and it meets the standards, the notion that you would might have to wait a few months for that doesn't really make a great deal of sense for us. And I don't believe that you all necessarily feel, I don't want to speak for you, but if these are really minor changes that meet the standards, as is the case with HDBR, those should be staff reviewed.
Especially if somebody's got a leaking roof, they want to replace it yesterday, not in a month.
And I would note, we have looked at the way other cities handle this. Most, almost every municipality, if you're talking about minor changes, actually, those are just approved by staff. There is no public notice. There's no commission review or landmarks commission review. Those are just literally approved on this level, assuming they meet the standards, of course. But that's normally how it's done, so that, again, historic preservation is not seen as a burden to homeowners when they're trying to do small work that meets the standards. Obviously, anything that is not in this list still has to come to you guys. So we're not saying, I don't want you to think that like we tried to sneak something in here like, oh, you know, additions can be approved by staff. We're not saying that at all. All the stuff you've been seeing will still be coming to you. This is just clarification based on the application. So I hope that makes sense, what we're trying to accomplish here.
Kirsten Connor, I have a comment about demolition of non-contributing building. My opinion, I don't think it's appropriate to just be a staff decision. I would prefer that come to the board.
Okay, thank you.
That's all I have a problem with. Other than that, like, I would love for you guys to take on whatever you can.
I concur with that, your statement as well, that with non-contributing buildings, I don't think that should be staff approved.
That's a good point.
That means that we'd also have to amend the bylaws, because this is what's existing currently in the bylaws. Okay.
Well,
all of this is in the HPC bylaws.
I think it's very important to do that if we could work on that. Yeah.
Kathy Levine, I'm going to chime in too. I mean, the Victorian and these other districts don't get as much attention as the downtown district. Our surveys, our National Register nominations, contributing versus non-contributing buildings, are certainly not up to date. Everybody knows that. There are hundreds of buildings in the Victorian district we know that are non-contributing and could be very well, very easily added. For instance, the ones on the park. So I'm going to agree. And if we need to have a demolition ordinance, put in our HPC ordinance, I think we need to. It's our job to protect the unprotected resources. And I think all demolitions in the national, state, local historic district should be brought to a preservation commission versus staff level.
Yeah, and we've discussed this repeatedly over the last 4 or 5 years. This is not something that the board has not addressed before, that we want to do that. The fact that we have to do it with Ardsley Park, that's one of the few things that they do have to bring before us. And I was saying that, oh, well, in the Victorian district, well, if it's built in 1929, we don't have to review it. That's absurd.
Pat Richardson, where did we leave off at with the deconstruct and salvage versus the demolition?
That should be the work in progress through the subcommittee.
Yes, we're still working on that. Sorry, Pat. Are you talking about deconstruction? Yes, May is now no longer with you all, but that is something I know that we're working on to see how it can be best implemented to make it actually work when people are doing demolitions. How do we ensure when someone is taking down a building that they actually deconstruct it? There's the question of how is that actually enforced? That's always been in the front of my mind. If somebody comes before you and you all say, okay, you can take it down, you have to deconstruct it, they get a permit to knock the building down. Where is there the mechanism that, you know, we or the city preservation officer are alerted so that we know that they are going to do it as opposed to just knocking the building down? So to me, we need to
Can we require them to have like a third party contract with the deconstruction?
I mean, I think it's something we can, you know, discuss with the city in terms of how things are enforced. It's always, it's a challenge. I'm sure you've heard me and the staff say we have a challenge with enforcement on many issues.
We still have a fence outside a business that was denied over a year and a
half. And I was, you all may be aware, I hope you're all aware, tomorrow at the Zoning Board of Appeals, the application for 1605 Abercorn Street, which is the house that burned, that was before you all, you all said they could remove the sections that were damaged but not demolish the entire building. They've appealed your decision. That's going to be heard tomorrow at the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. You can see the staff report that's already been posted by Edward Morrow's team. They are recommending upholding your decision that they not be allowed to take down the entire building because there has not been a demolition order issued by the city and some other reasons. So, but I wanted to make you aware of that.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to put out there, we have our wonderful preservation officer for the city now, and I believe that she is trying to work on in conjunction with the decon coalition. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. It's
being worked on, which is, and the director of HSF at preservation.
Yes. I think it's something that everyone's in agreement on. It's just how do you actually.
Very complicated.
To me, the hardest part in past positions I've held where we've had this requirement is how do you actually make it work? Where as opposed to somebody says, well, we started taking it down, the whole thing fell down. And how do you, that's the challenge. I don't think anybody's, you know, everybody's on the same page in terms of what the goal was. So I hear you loud and clear. So demolition of non-contributing buildings, you most definitely do not want, as you want that to be a commission. Mm-hmm.
And even if we start looking at a demolition review ordinance, a stronger one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you have any other comments on this?
Oh. Kirsten Connor, this is not to really to do with this. I just wanted to throw it out there because sure. I don't know if it's still on everyone's mind. Somehow putting different wording in about painting structures and how it's been confused with painting brick and how that's not okay.
Yes, there was the building on 37th, I believe. Yeah. The apartment building that was painted white or gray.
Yeah, like a off-white cream.
Right. We will be definitely be back to you. That was before my time.
Right.
But I believe we could control. I believe the city's attorney had looked into that, and unfortunately, I think we couldn't.
It is a material change, though.
Yeah. I mean, we will follow up with the city, okay. And I know Jessica's here on that again. But I believe at the time, the determination was that painting could not be controlled. At least Leah, my predecessor, that's what she told me. But we will definitely follow up with you on that.
Thank you.
Well, especially since it goes against the preservation standards, the National Park Service preservation standards.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what you need.
No, I agree. I mean, I think we're in agreement with you. We just need to figure again how to actually do it. But I hear you. We hear you, I should say. So with the change of the non-contributing demolition, how do you all feel about the proposed revisions moving forward?
So we have a member. I don't know whether we're actually open to public comment.
Yes.
However, how does the rest of the board feel for a member of the public to make a comment on this? Please step forward. State your name, sir. Seeing as you're clearly here to for this part of the agenda.
I'm waiting. So. This is my moment.
All right.
Hi, my name is Jim Hunchrecker. I asked that if it's in your power to have the actual application documents along with the staff decision. That was an issue at the HDBR that you couldn't see. You could see the staff recommendation, but you could not see what the application was suggesting. Also, the appeal process must be within 30 days. Therefore, approvals must be posted immediately, I guess, on the website, on the MPC website, for the public's access in case of filing an appeal. Those are my only two comments.
Okay. Preservation Director.
Jessica Baldwin, City of Savannah. The city just wants to comment about the ordinance changes as well. We firmly believe that staff should have the ability to make decisions without having to bog down the board. We do think that there needs to be a period that the SHPO can review these and make their determination as if they follow state law, which is the reason that the HPC regulations are different from downtown. They were created post-state enabling legislation. So the city just notes that we would ask that we slow down with that just a bit. While we do understand that complicates things with staff, making hasty decisions in terms of preservation is never a good idea.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay.
All right.
You want us to make a decision? I mean, we're as far as.
Yes, I believe if you could make a motion, if you'd like this to move forward to MPC, there's still so many steps.
Yeah. Okay. So.
And if the SHPO turns out to say you can't do it, there's no harm in you all taking an action today. Because if the SHPO says no, it would obviously trump it in the city attorney.
All right, so I've got HSF having a conversation with the city over there, and let's have, if you've got an opinion, please come forward and state it.
As a member of the public, you're free to comment, but.
And we're open to your thoughts, Kelly.
I think procedurally, if you want to continue it, I think that's a smart decision, but I think that you need to let SHPO weigh in before you make any determining factors.
And we appreciate that input.
And I just wanted to echo what Kirsten said about the non-contributing demolition for the reasons why Kathy stated as well. We agree with that should come to the board and not be a staff-level decision. And just as an update for the decon ordinance, it is in progress. It's just a lot to figure out. But there is a group of us that's trying to get all that sorted. So then whenever it is presented to the city to collaborate first with before it comes to you guys, that it is ironed out, with any issues that there may be. Do you have questions for me?
No, but okay. What I'm thinking, I'm going to address the board on this, is that we would, ask the MPC staff to remove the demolition before submitting it to the state, yeah. Right? And then continue our decision on the rest of it. So
not continue.
Aren't we continuing this? Because aren't they going to present it to the state before we approve it?
We would approve it. They would present it to the state.
Yeah. I mean, basically.
No.
Basically, oh, okay. What we are recommending, just to be clear, yeah. MPC staff, is with, I think it's an excellent point that Kathy and Kirsten have talked about, the demolition of non-contributing buildings, recommending approval of this. So we move forward with the change about the demolition. If the SHPO next week weighs in, there's no harm in you all doing that. Because it still has to go through the MPC and then it would have to go to the city council. The challenge is that if you continue everything now and we get, then we have to come back to you guys. We're just trying to think about trying to expedite things. If there was some great downside, remember, you all saying that you endorse this today doesn't change anything. That doesn't.
If the SHPO comes back, you need to not use that language, then you're going to have to come back again anyway.
Right. But if SHPO says that we're fine, we don't have to come back. There's no downside. There's no downside to it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, well, yeah. I'm
because your decision is not actually. Right. So we're just trying to, we're trying to help also help the public.
Okay.
Kathy, go ahead.
Kirsten Connor, I have one more comment, and I'm so sorry that I didn't bring this up earlier. The language for number one, roof repair and or roof replacement, I feel like there needs to be more added to that because they might be able to just replace the roof, like roof replacement in kind or something like that. I don't know if that's a big deal.
Well, when I see we're going to say, you know, is the staff going to put the brakes on it? If it's not a,
that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, we tried to, we're trying again,
to say, oh, no, you can't put that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we just to give you assurances, we do look very closely when, and there have been many that have come in over just since I've been here over the last year where they say, oh, we're only doing, and then we look at their plans and we say, wait a minute. There was one right. Just the other day where, you know.
I was thinking more of an, like, ordinance terms, but I trust you guys. Yeah. I'm sorry.
We try to not make get too, you know, I mean, you can make each of these very wordy and detailed, but then you also can go down a rabbit hole where you're. Yeah. I also would just say again that I think there is, you know, quite a bit of, you know, public notice and literally if you compare this to any other jurisdiction, the amount of public notice is much more than you would see, which is a good thing. But, you know, I think that should be acknowledged.
And all your decisions are based on the Secretary of Interior standards, correct?
And our design standards and, right. Yeah, right. And visual right. Compatibility and, right. Yes.
So,
yeah, we're
so
not.
These are backed by all of those.
Yes, if so you read one of our staff decisions.
Where would the timeline come in that was just mentioned by Jim? The timeline.
Well, this still has to, as I said.
The timeline that he stated.
Yes, so we're working on that. Okay. That we're going to have a link on our website that would then have all the staff decisions that you could then jump, you know, to it, and it would have them posted there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I was just making sure that was.
Yeah, I mean, it's more just reworking a couple of technical things, which we don't worry you with.
So we could do that actually now.
Yes, we just need to actually create, we need to move everything and just, you know.
Okay. So they need something from us.
Or you can just continue it. It's up to you, obviously. It's your, we're just trying to.
Well, yeah, well, decision one way or the other. What do we want to do?
Keep the discussion going.
So you don't want them to, you don't want to approve this and go and go to SHPO, you want to continue it and wait.
And go to SHPO and have the discussion. This is like our.
So we're approving this stuff minus the demolition, right? So, okay, someone make that motion and let's go.
Can you scroll back up, Jonathan?
I'm sorry?
Oh, perfect. Katrina Hornung, I make a motion to recommend the proposed ordinance amendments minus the demolition, which is 10.
Thank you.
To be submitted
to the SHPO for review and discussion.
Do I get a second?
Jeff Notrika, second.
All right, Jeff, your vote?
Approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathleen Vina, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Motion passes. Final item on the agenda.
Thank you.
Proposed solar arrays on buildings within historic districts.
Yes, I'm going to turn it over to the City of Savannah.
All right.
Whoop, whoop. So close. Thank you, Caitlin. You're so dreamy.
You need to state your name for the
I don't know
record.
How we get by without you. Thank you. Okay. We can do it like this.
Yeah. All right. The City of Savannah's Office of Sustainability and Planning and Urban Design Department want to notify the board of four solar panel projects today. These projects are a part of Savannah's Sustainable Cities Initiative and the 100% Savannah. They reflect the drive to use cleaner, renewable energy resources as climate change becomes an ever-growing concern within our community. Project one is in Kyler Brownsville Historic District and is located at the Tompkins Regional Center, address 2333 Ogeechee Road. It is a non-contributing building, and the project will have solar panels installed onto a standing seam metal roof. The solar project will cover approximately 30% of the roof. Cherry Street Solar, the city's contractor for the project, determined that the southwestern roof provided the highest and best use for the 108 panels that will be installed. The panels will be mounted no more than 6 inches above the roof, as shown in the diagram at the center right. And the aerial view and photo represent approximate locations of the panels and how they will be viewed from the street. You will note these panels are partially visible from the street. A review was determined that the flat portion roof of this building was not functional for the solar panels, as there were too many obstructions, including HVAC units, that did not allow for an array of panels. Project two is also in Kyler Brownsville and is located next door to the previous project at 1001 West 39th Street on a non-contributing building. This project will have panels installed on the standing seam metal roof. The solar panels will cover approximately 30% of the roof. Cherry Street Solar, the city's contractor for the project, determined that the southwestern portion of this roof provided the highest and best return for the 51 panels that will be installed. The location is off the main facade and away from the street, but will be partially visible from the street as seen in the photos here. The panels will be mounted no more than 6 inches above the roof, as shown in the diagram at the center. Project three is in the Streetcar Historic District on the corner of Lincoln and East 35th Streets on a non-contributing building. This project will have panels installed on the standing seam metal roof. The project will cover approximately 11% of the roof. The city's contractor for the project determined that this section of the roof provided the best and highest use for the 108 panels. And the location is off of the main, But it is off of the main portion and entrance of the facade to what would be the back of the building as much as possible. And will be installed 6 inches above the roof line as per the diagram. Project four, sorry, I wrote these wrong, is in the Streetcar Historic District and on the corner of Whitaker and East 33rd Streets in a non-contributing building. Project panels will be installed on a TPO roof. This project will take up about 65% of the roof. The panels will be mounted no more than 10 inches above the roof and as per the diagram, and staff believes these will not be visible from the street due to the 12-inch tall parapet, according to the as-built drawings held at the municipal archives. That's it.
All right. Fantastic.
Okay. Yep. We'll be taking comments for 45 days, by the way.
Do we need to approve these?
Nope.
Oh, good.
Just letting you know what's happening.
Oh, thank you.
You're Connor, welcome.
I appreciate you notifying us.
Quick question, though. I've got a question.
Sure.
Is six inches, is that, I mean, is that the,
that's typical.
The lowest? That's the lowest mm-hmm. profile you can get?
The court, from every solar project I've ever done in other municipalities with other solar companies as well, 6 inches is pretty much it, because you have to get the apparatus under there, and then there's, like, pieces that have to connect all the panels together, and that runs underneath them, so they need about 6 inches.
Was not accurate.
That's, I mean, maybe they can do it in four. I feel like by the time you,
okay.
Yeah, I think five to six is pretty standard.
Five to six mm-hmm. is standard.
Okay. I think these here talk about four, like 5.25 or something.
These are probably,
so
these are,
I rounded up.
These are, yeah, there's a lot more of these. You're going through a commercial level, aren't you, really?
Yes, correct.
Rather than,
and the way they'll be installed on the TPO roof is very different than how they're installed on a standing seam metal. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Cool. So, thanks, guys.
I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Our next pre-meeting is on the November the 20th at 1:30, and the next meeting is November 20th at 2 p.m. Thank
forget
you all
about
for
historic
attending.
Training. Don't forget about historic training next week.
Yes. We have our training next, the 30th. And it's virtual.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Please make sure you register so that you can get the link. If you do not register, you will not get the link.
Thank you.